It's Clippy on steroids.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, November 23rd, 2023. This is your award-winning Gibbonation Media Assassination, episode 1610.
This is No Agenda.
Accepting accelerationism and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA region number 6. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where everyone's watching the Thanksgiving Gay Parade, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Yeah. Which has been interrupted by protesters. Did you see it?
I saw some clips of the protesters.
Yeah, they've the parade.
I watched
stopped.
The parade on NBC, which is not affiliated with blah blah blah. And I didn't see any gay anything.
Any what? Any what? Any gay anything?
Well, there's supposed to be all these gay, the big gay.
No. This is the Palestinian protesters. The gays are stayed home for the Palestinian protesters.
No, there's supposed to be gays incorporated in the parade.
There were like two
trans.
Gays.
I'm sorry, not gays. Trans. It's a different. Queers. It's different.
Queers for turkeys?
All I know is I didn't get to see much.
No.
Hey, Mimi, who did the big giant list today?
The big giant, the donation list, you mean?
No, the PhD list.
The meetup.
Just the meetup.
It's not that giant.
Oh, she said it was a huge one today. Oh, she was talking to me. Never mind. So, she wants to remind people to.
Wow. Yes. Oh, Anaconda Dvorak. Yes. What can we do for you?
Tomiaches.com. She said, you never plug the book anymore.
Oh, boy. Wow, she's getting feisty.
Yeah, well.
It's never. One of our producers plugged the book just the other day. In the meetup segment, they were plugging it. Never plugged the book anymore. What, sales are slacking off and now she's like she has to come to the No Agenda show to fix it? Hello? I didn't mean to insult
you. You said it. Reset it just as you said hello.
I didn't mean to insult you. Hey, hold on a second. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, what happened?
We'll see. I may have to switch networks.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I believe this is the first Thanksgiving that you and I have celebrated together where we both have turkey calls.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, we both have a turkey call. Where's your turkey call, man? Come on.
Well, that's a good question.
Wait, don't tell me you don't have your... It's the one day when you should be...
I never even thought
turkey.
About it.
Wow. And you're too busy worrying about too many eggs. .com. There you go.
Turkey call.
Well, while you're looking for that, along the lines of your newsletter, which was very good as usual, I will play a clip from I believe this to be a millennial aged woman in America. Looks like there you go. Looks like she's got a nice little pad out there in the wilderness. She's just sitting on a nice balcony, and she just doesn't believe in traditional Thanksgiving. Oh, no.
Can we decolonize Thanksgiving the same way we decolonized Columbus Day? Can we rename Thanksgiving to Tribal Nations Day, a day where we still have dinner with our families or our friends or our fur babies, but we also uplift Native voices and Native businesses, and we learn the true history of tribal nations within this country, and where we decolonize our landscapes and plant native plants instead of invasive species, and that will in turn also support native wildlife, and to decolonize our foods and incorporate traditional foods from within our area. I think all of this will help decolonize our spaces.
Decolonize our spaces! Why can't we just have traditional, like Thanksgiving, you know, where we just all get together and we give thanks.
Everybody wants to make a fuss.
Yes, everybody does want to make a fuss. Yeah. Do you want to tell everyone the true story of Thanksgiving, as you often do on this this day of giving thanks?
Well, I wasn't prepared to do that, even though I've done it every year. There was a link to the story in the newsletter. from a previous newsletter in which I discussed it in great detail, but it largely was kind of came into being as a day of Thanksgiving. It was always called after soldiers were killed in the after the Civil War. Lincoln actually initiated the what I think amounts to the current Thanksgiving Day. But the initial story is just bogus. And there was a harvest festival. They had something that kind of came and went for a couple of years. But no, the whole Thanksgiving story is completely false.
Okay.
And so I'm always thought that it was be under pressure to be changed to something else. But
National Tribal Nations Day is taking it a bit far.
Yeah, but see, the problem is, it's like this Thanksgiving's become a tradition, I think, since the Depression.
Yeah.
And it has, and it gives you that extra, the key is that extra Friday off.
If you start, yes, that's what it's all about.
You start messing with Thanksgiving, you're messing with that extra day off, and it, it could go, the whole thing can go away, and you're going to lose a 4-day holiday in the middle of nowhere, which is really people prize. It's a big deal to get that many days off for a bogus holiday.
Yes, and it's always
change it.
It's a difficult one, particularly for Americans post-COVID, because you know we have to get together with our families, and families were split, were ripped apart over divides, not just
over. There was at least a year or maybe two where it was like illegal to have Thanksgiving dinner
because you would kill grandma. Grandma would kill over.
Granny would be dead.
So you know we still have these uncomfortable conversations. What are we going to talk about at the table? Particularly if it's you know, if there's political divides in families. And there was a lady who called in on C-SPAN and told us what she was going to tell her relatives at the Thanksgiving table today.
Hi, how are you?
Morning.
I have a couple of comments. When it comes up at my family's Thanksgiving dinner, I will remind my family, because we're all dog lovers, I don't think Trump loves dogs. He's always cutting down dogs and treating terrorists, calling them dogs. And anyone that has no compassion for animals is not on my bucket list. So I'm going to remind them about that.
Trump hates dogs.
Bucket list.
He's not on my bucket list if you hate dogs. Hey, lady, I was a dog hater for a long time. I've come around.
It's true.
But I will say I'm very thankful this year, extremely thankful for No Agenda Nation, for the clip collector, the clip custodian, for our end of show mixers, for our artists, for our producers. Yes, for every single producer who delivers time, talent, and treasure to the show. I'm grateful that we get to do this, even on this day of giving of thanks, National Tribal Day, Tribal Nations Day?
First Nations.
First Nations Day. And of course, I'm thankful for you, John. I'm very thankful for you.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
I mean that. I'm thankful for you.
Yeah.
And we've taken to ask, we were shopping yesterday, when we encounter someone, we say, what are you thankful for this year? And it takes many people by surprise. What? They haven't even thought about it. This is how deep we've sunken in this country, in our country. And the people don't even think about, I'm thankful for Black Friday. Thankful for Cyber Monday. You know, get me on some deals. In fact, this is Black Friday week. It's Black Friday in the Netherlands. I mean, they have Black Friday.
Me up
they
have
Black Friday bought, in the Netherlands.
England has the same thing they bought into
Black Friday. But there was one moment which took us aback as a team was buying a tree ornament as a gift for someone. And we say, and she says to the checkout lady, probably about, she's about 40, I'd say, late 30s. What are you thankful for? She says, I am just happy to be alive. I'm like, yeah, praise the Lord. Yes. She says, because I had a heart attack last year. I'm like, what? She says, yeah, came out of nowhere. Tina and I look at each other like, oh, man. What? Yeah. But, you know, and I should have said that. I forgot. Hey, did you get the vax? No. No. No.
Yeah.
No. No, no, no. Anyway, it's been a fantastic week as the Great Awakening has begun. I already felt this was coming as I was texting with Taxi Eric about the Dutch elections. And Christina and my nephew both were saying, we're so sick of this. We're so sick of everything. So I think Christina said, you know, the leftists in our country, they really have nice unicorn dreams, but we're sick of this. And they all voted for Geert Wilders.
In the Netherlands, the Dutch populist Geert Wilders appeared headed for a landslide election win tonight in the latest far-right victory across Europe. Supporters celebrated this evening in The Hague as projections showed Wilders' anti-Islam, anti-immigration party winning the most seats in parliament. He called for a governing coalition.
Now the campaign is over and the voters have spoken. And now we will also have to look for agreements with each other. From a wonderful position with 35 seats, we can no longer be ignored by any party.
Before the election, mainstream Dutch parties largely dismissed any talk of a coalition with Wilders.
A very poor report from PBS, but what do you expect?
Well, that was pretty lame, but I have to. But it is interesting how the other parties refused to have anything to do with him, and now he wins.
That's not
now
they true, have to, but that's also not true.
Yeah, well, good. This shows that the report is worse than I thought.
The other, so there is one large party, the Green and Labour Party. They got together and still couldn't get enough. I mean, nowhere near the amount of seats that Geert Wilders got. But he actually changed his message about a year ago, and he said, "Look, kijk, he dialed back the Islamophobic stuff, which he never was Islamophobic. He said, we don't need immigration in our country. We're not an immigration country. And Islam brings trouble. He dialed that back and said, all right, everybody who's here, you're Dutch. I'm here for all Dutch people. And the VVD, which is the center-right party, they got a new gal to run the show. And she said, you know, we could actually work with Geert Wilders. So now you have, and he's not like the far right.
I mean, it's the same thing in Argentina.
Well, I got that too. But let me just tell you. I mean, so Europe is clutching its pearls over this. Oh no,
they're all gonna fall.
Far right. Oh no, we're shocked. Of course, Le Pen in France is like, hey, this is good. Everyone's got a shot now.
Still won't work there.
France is saying, oh, no, this is a problem. And they kind of recognize that immigration is an issue. Scandinavia, you're like, oh, far right, Islamophobe. But this is what he handily did. The guy has been in Dutch politics for almost 25 years. And he finally got his shot because it was time. Everybody was sick. And the reason why the Dutch government fell, the cabinet fell, is over immigration. You know, people are waiting in Holland. This is a socialist country. They're waiting 5 years on a list to be allowed to rent a home, and in comes, boop, 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 hey, I'm an asylum seeker. Whoop, I'm taking your home. Thanks, government. So people were sick of it. Just a couple of these clips, because BBC NewsHour had their typical slant.
The first exit polls from the Dutch general election are showing a commanding lead for the far-right, populist, anti-immigrant Freedom Party, led by Geert Wilders.
Geert!
The other main player in the ballot, former EU Commissioner Frans Timmermans, left-green alliance, did better than predicted in the polls. Our correspondent Anna Holligan joins us from The Hague. And Anna, this lead for the Freedom Party led by Geert Wilders, is it substantiated by early results?
There's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? These results surpass, I think, probably even his own greatest expectations. Geert Wilders' Freedom Party is indeed the largest party, and what that means is not necessarily that he will be the next Prime Minister of the Netherlands, but that he will be given the first opportunity to try to form a coalition government. And we have had an indication from him already. He has made a victory speech, and he appears to be reaching out to the other parties, signalling he's prepared to compromise, saying he wants to control the tsunami of asylum within the limits of the constitution.
And, well, obviously the people in the Netherlands have voted for the party that they wanted, but this will be causing some nervousness, I would imagine, in Brussels.
Absolutely, yes. And even if Geert Wilders fails to convince enough other parties to join him in a governing coalition, if the other parties refuse to do that, they will be accused of failing to listen to the voice of the people when such a significant portion of the population have voted for this man. And just in the context of Brussels, bear in mind, in his manifesto, he has offered the possibility...
Oh, now he has a manifesto. Isn't that interesting? It's called a party program, but the BBC calls it his manifesto.
Disassociative. This is the kind of thing that these guys do. In fact, using the term far right...
Doesn't make any real sense.
He's a conservative.
Yes. Yes.
At best.
Yeah.
Far right is another associative term used to indicate fascism or Hitler.
Yes. With manifesto, which means
you got your communist in there with a manifesto.
Yes.
This is a ridiculous report.
And the same goes for...
By the way, mispronouncing his name over and over and over again is also a form of insult.
Of course. And the BBC should know better. So then we have the same thing happening in Argentina, and he is, by his own description, a libertarian, which is, forgive me if I get it wrong, but libertarian is not far right, is it?
No, and not only that, but it turns out, according to, I've been watching this too, he's the first actual libertarian that's ever been elected to anything at that level.
Anything. The libertarians in America.
No, libertarians usually don't get elected to anything.
No, the libertarians in America, which I mean, no offense to them at all, but I was always like, I'm a Republican, but I don't want to say it. So I'm going to call my, I have my own family say to me, trying to give me an out, like, because I'm not a member of any party, never have been, say, you're a libertarian, right? What do you mean?
Well, I claimed to be a libertarian for about a year.
Yeah, but
until I realized that there's nothing, there is no such thing. It's just a bull crap moniker that you can use. Well, I believe in this. Oh, I would call it like Republicans who believe in abortion.
Abortion. So the Dutch, someone had actually put my name into the hat somewhere at the Dutch Libertarian Party. Not that I would ever consider it, but and why? I mean, I live in Texas, and the leadership of the party said, "Oh no, he's too controversial." This because they're pussies, and I know I'm going to get a lot of libertarians mad at me. I'm saying,
there's no real libertarians. I've come to that conclusion.
Well, that's not true because
except for the guy in Argentina.
But do we call him a libertarian?
A seismic political shift is underway here in Argentina as the far-right radical outsider, an unknown political force.
Far-right radical outsider.
Javier Milei has become elected president. Now, his supporters are flocking to this hotel, which has become his base camp for the
base camp.
Election. And they're partying, they're chanting his chanting liberty, the name of his party is Liberty Advances. They're convinced that he is the solution to Argentina's chronic problems. The economy is struggling at the moment with inflation running at 140%, and it means that 40% of the population is living below the poverty line. He only became a politician 2 years ago, and now as a populist, he's promising radical reforms. As a result, he's being compared to Trump in the US and Bolsonaro in Brazil. He wants to adopt the dollar as the official currency of Argentina. He also wants to close down the central bank and slash public funding, as well as relaxing gun laws. Now, how much of this he will be able to actually implement remains to be seen. His political party is very new, and he only has a fraction of the politicians in the lower chamber and also a fraction of the senators in the upper house too. So he's going to have to do a lot of negotiating, but for the moment these people here don't care. They're happy to take a chance on this unknown politician, hoping that he will be able to solve the country's problems.
I think PBS also had a thing? Yeah, they had this thing on him here.
Argentinian president-elect Javier Milei celebrated his election win amidst a euphoric crowd.
Hoy empezamos a dar vuelta la página.
Today we turn the page on our history and we return to the path that we should never have lost.
Promising a new political era.
Basta del modelo.
Stop this impoverishing model of the caste.
What is this voiceover? Is PBS out of money? Do they need no donations? This guy's in a tin can. That's very odd, PBS.
Today we embrace the libertarian models.
I think he's doing it in the toilet. He's in the bathroom somewhere doing this voiceover.
I'm not hearing that.
You don't hear it? Oh.
Turn to being a global power.
Supporters filled the streets of Buenos Aires last night, hoping Milei's election means an end to decades of economic crises.
I think this time Argentina needed a change, and that's why I bet on this new proposal.
Well, I'll just skip to the end because it's too long here. I'm bored of it, but this was interesting.
Ministerio de las Mujeres y Género y Diversidad, afuera.
Milei also opposes abortion rights, wants to end the Ministry of Women, Gender and Diversity, and to loosen gun restrictions. He also famously has four cloned dogs created in a New York lab, whom he thanked when he won the August primary.
I want to thank the four-legged children, Murray, Milton, Robert, and Lucas.
A novice politician who has already grasped one of the profession's oldest rules. If you want a friend in politics, get a dog. Oh. Or four. Oh.
I didn't know they were cloned dogs that he had. That's kind of weird. He had cloned dogs made in a New York lab. Woo. So
yeah, there's been cloned dogs for a long time.
But the thing that I really thought was just interesting was that, you know, my daughter and she's now in social services. She works she's a social worker now, believe it or not. And you know, so she says, yeah, there's a lot of lefties around, but not everybody. They're sick of it. They're sick of it. They're sick of the policies. They're sick of everything that's going on. And I need to give him props. Jordan Peterson was on Bill Maher, and for as much crap as we give him about this ARC outfit, he kind of nailed it with this.
Well, this is the main issue. I mean, part of the reason that you see all this foolishness on university campuses too is because people have bought this idiot meta-Marxism, which is that the way to look at every social relationship that people ever have is through the lens of power, and that is, we can put that squarely at the feet of the universities. As far as I'm concerned, is, you know, marriage is a patriarchal institution, and business is nothing but oppression, and you have to view every single situation that emerged historically as oppressor versus oppressed. And then once you get that, which you can get in about 2 minutes if you sit in the course that teaches that sort of thing, you have a lens to moralize about the whole world through. And then you see the situation is that the leftists have already decided the Palestinians are the victims. And as you pointed out, if you're a victim, then you're morally righteous. And even more conveniently, if you stand for the victim, then you're morally righteous, regardless of what you do with your own life. And that's pretty much what university students are taught from the time they enter the university classroom. And that's how they, you know, orient themselves morally. Well, and that's at the hands of the radical left, too, Bill. And one of the things the Democrats also have to pay the price for, I would say, is their absolute refusal to draw a line between the moderate Democrats and the extremists. They're completely incapable of doing that. Like, I've talked to 40 senators and congressmen in the last 5 years. I asked them all the same question, including RFK. He wouldn't answer either. When does the left go too far? Well, we certainly bloody well saw it in the last month, didn't we? Because they got the oppressive narrative a little mucked up, we might say. And we're going to, the consequences of that are going to unfold pretty brutally over the next few months.
Yes. Well, he nails
not the
it.
Next few months, but well, the next few years for sure.
No, it's happening now. I think this is happening. And the big thing is politically, like now people are, oh my God, I have these really short little clips. Some of these people took their children. I'm talking 7-year-olds, seemed like there were some 5-year-olds. They took them to Washington, D.C., stood them outside of the White House, put little kiffies on them. All these kids are in their Palestinian scarves. And they made them say horrible things. Listen, oh, no, this is so outrageous.
When you say this is not going to unfold the next couple of months, I don't see it. It's still going in the wrong direction. It's going to be years before this is turned around.
Well,
and you're just giving me more examples. No, that's an example.
No, no. I think what we're seeing, no, the reason why they're going to have to turn the tide, particularly on Israel, but also Ukraine, we'll get to that, is because when you have kids on the news doing this. So that's just a, but now listen to this one.
Biden, Biden, what do you say?
Biden, Biden, what do you say?
How many kids have you killed today?
Biden, Biden, what do you say?
I know you say, how many kids have you killed today?
How many kids
what have you killed? What was the one? Hey ho, Genocide Joe has got to go. No. There's another one.
That's no, but oh, no, no, wait. But listen to this one.
From the river to the sea.
From the river to the sea.
So that's, you know, that's just kids who don't, just their parents taught them this stuff. But this kid caught outside of the purview of his parents has the quote of the day.
Don't believe Joe Biden ever.
That's your future Democrat voter.
It is.
Don't believe Joe Biden ever. And then, you know, and Hollywood is messing it up.
As if the kid even knows who Joe Biden, really knows who Joe Biden
is. Of course not. Of course.
It's you're right. This is child abuse at its worst, at the most extreme.
Yes. And then you get stuff like this.
Academy Award-winning actress Susan Sarandon has been dropped from major Hollywood agency UTA following her comments that American Jews are getting a taste of what it feels like to be a Muslim. And her comments come at a time America is seeing a rise in anti-Semitism. We know Susan Sarandon from the hit movies Thelma and Louise, and she won her Oscar for Dead Man Walking. But now the internet is flooded with calls for Susan Sarandon to stick to acting and quit the divine rhetoric. She made the comments at a pro-Palestinian rally in New York City last Friday. Let's recap what she said.
There are a lot of people that are afraid of being Jewish at this time and are getting a taste of what it feels like to be a Muslim.
And she was a top promoter of Biden against Trump, so it's falling apart. And then...
But wait a minute, stop there. I don't know if you recall this, but she actually was originally for Trump.
For a half a second.
Well, until her peer group got on her.
Yes, and then she put a pussy hat on and was good to go. But we've also reached peak incubator. They have nothing left to do. There's no more propaganda once you're here.
In each of these incubators, fragile, tiny lives. The babies are sick and emaciated, born prematurely, and even more vulnerable because during those first crucial weeks, they were surrounded by war. They evacuated first to southern Gaza from the embattled El Shifa hospital in the north. On Monday, two were reunited with their mother. Today was the first time I was able to see my daughters 39 days after I gave birth, she says. The feelings of fear and worry in my emotional state was very difficult. The twins were among the 28 babies then evacuated to Egypt. A freelance journalist working for CBC News took this video as they left to receive urgent care.
So they had all the babies in the incubator, out of the incubator. Incubator. I mean, your peak incubator. So then... All right, the phone call goes out like, bro, BB, bro, we got to do something. This, you're killing us over here, man.
After a grueling 46 days, the Israeli parliament has voted in favor of a hostage deal with Hamas. Qatar's mediation, along with Egypt and the U.S., have secured a short but crucial period of respite.
This deal could signal a change in the general atmosphere of this conflict. This will be a break in the wave and will create a new reality that may convince the Israelis that power doesn't always achieve the desired results, and that sitting at a negotiation table is better and can bring more practical results for us and for them, more than what they can gain from the battlefield.
The deal promises some relief for both sides, but Netanyahu has made it clear this is only temporary.
There is nonsense out there as if after the ceasefire to return the hostages, we will stop the war. I'd like to make it clear, we are at war. And we will continue the war until we achieve all our goals. Eliminate Hamas, return all the hostages and missing, and guarantee that there will be no threat to Israel in Gaza.
So they're there. They're there already. They got it all. There's nothing left of Gaza. It's rubbleized. They got the, they've played the incubator card. It's done.
Once you play the incubator card, you're done. That's
I
the
mean,
end.
Especially when you play it. I mean, that's like the aces of incubators. I mean, that's just, you're done. You're just, it's, there's no turning back at that point. It's so bad. Now that our State Department, this State Department guy, he's no good.
Which one?
Oh, what's which his name? One? The one who does the press briefings.
That's not is it the Jake Sullivan lookalike.
But he's
he
not.
He looks like, if you look at him, he looks like a 1920s silent film actor.
Well,
doesn't he?
It would be better if he didn't speak because he flubbed this one up bad.
Whatever infrastructure exists at a hospital, under a hospital, no matter who put it there, terrorists should not be using that infrastructure to embed themselves underneath a civilian target, underneath a civilian civilian hospital, underneath a hospital that is supposed to exist for the care of civilians. Yeah.
Civilian targets. I mean, whoops.
And making that, you know, using that that facility as a human shield.
So it is
a separate issue than who might have built whatever room it is the former prime minister was referring to.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. No, we can't. BB, do something. You're killing us. This is no good. Democrats, we don't look good, man. We do not look good. And then, meanwhile, Ukraine is really, this is over. This is over. Richard Haass went on Morning Joe, and he wrote this big article about the war. And he's Council on Foreign Relations, former...
Yeah, big shot.
Was he Secretary of Defense? He was up there. He definitely was.
I don't know about that.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. He was. I have him here. I know his Council on Foreign Relations, which you've been looking at.
No, he is definitely.
The president of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah, he runs the place.
Yeah, or he just stopped, I think. He was advisor. He policy planning for the Department of State, advisor to Colin Powell. When he was,
He was one of these. He was advisor, like basically what he is still, which is a head of CFR. Yes. He's an advisor. Yes.
Advisor, but
the only thing he's really looks like he did anything for crap was he was the special envoy for Northern Ireland. The rest of it is pretty much all Council on Foreign Relations.
So he has
He won the Presidential Citizens Medal, I'd like to know. But okay.
Well, so he's written an article that is basically end the war in Ukraine now.
You co-wrote a new piece this morning for Foreign Affairs entitled "A New Strategy Must Balance Means and Ends." Explain your concern, especially as the White House is managing wars on two completely different fronts.
Well, Mika, the White House is managing two wars, but in both of them, I would say we're increasingly at odds with our allies and partners. We just talked in the previous hour about the differences with Israel, about how the war is being fought and about what comes after. In Ukraine, I think we've got a real problem where there's simply an enormous gap between what the goals are of the policy and what the realities are. The idea that Ukraine is going to militarily liberate all the land that Russia occupies, approximately 20% of their territory, it's laudable. I support it. It's just not going to happen.
Well, this is a change. It's just not going to happen. And then he explains why and what should be done. And of course, it's time to rebuild. We need to get the dollars flowing to rebuild Ukraine. We've got to get this thing going, people. There's money.
How long do our allies in Europe, who've all done, I think, together, NATO's done an extraordinary job, how much longer do we continue pushing, I think, what many people in Pentagon would think is the unrealistic goal of Ukraine driving every last Russian out of their country?
It's exactly the right question, Joe. And what concerns me is when people get disillusioned and increasingly come to the where you and I are, that as desirable as it is, Joe, it's simply not feasible. They're going to increasingly say, and we're hearing it in the House, we're hearing.
I'm sorry?
I think Scarborough is also CFR.
CFR. Yeah, yeah. But it puts him and you put Scarborough squarely in the stop the war camp.
Increasingly come to the conclusion where you and I.
This was telling him.
Yeah. Oh, this is the message, Joe. This is where we are, right, Joe?
That as desirable as it is, it's simply not feasible. They're going to increasingly say, and we're hearing it in the House, we're hearing it in parts of Europe, why should we keep doing this? We're already stretched. We're trying to support Israel. We're worried about Taiwan. And even if we give everything we need to give or want to give to Ukraine, it still won't lead to success. What I argue, therefore, is the United States needs to have some very direct conversations with Ukraine, with President Zelensky, talk about reducing their emphasis on liberating land, increasingly put all their emphasis on holding on to what they've got.
Be happy with what you got, Zelensky. Just, you look, you got 80%. It's good. It's good.
You know, you might have stumbled onto something here. This guy, as the head of CFR, went on the show possibly to turn Joe around.
Boom.
Specifically.
45 seconds left here.
In the long run, diplomatically through sanctions, yes, we can try to see the rest of their territory return. But for right now, let's have 80% of this country safe, 80% of this country rebuilt. I would actually propose a ceasefire as an interim arrangement to expose the Russians for what they are so we can rebuild support for Ukraine in this country. But we've had two fighting seasons. The idea that one or two or three more years of this is going to result in success, I simply don't see it. Russia's on a war footing. They have access also to arms from North Korea and Iran. So I just think, you know, anytime in foreign policy, anytime in life, there's a big gap between what you're trying to do and your ability to do it. You've either got to increase your means or lower your goals. Boss. And I think here, the only realistic option as a tactical measure is to lower our goals.
And right on cue, the G20 brings back Vladimir.
It was the first G20 summit Vladimir Putin has joined, albeit remotely, since the 2022 Ukraine conflict. In a virtual meeting with world leaders on Wednesday, the Russian president softened his usual hostile tone, referring to the conflict as a tragedy, and even at one point using the word war to describe Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine instead of his preferred term of special military operation.
Some colleagues have already said in their speeches that they are shocked by the ongoing aggression of Russia in Ukraine. We must think about how to stop this tragedy. By the way, Russia has never refused peace negotiations with Ukraine. It's not Russia, but Ukraine that has publicly announced that it's withdrawing from the negotiation process.
He's signaling, he's like, okay, I hear you, CFR, we're good. Yeah, well, all we ever wanted was that 20%. You know, that's our turf. And Crimea, you're not getting that back.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah. So be happy with it, Volodymyr.
McGregor was on what his normal talk show that he keeps showing up on, coughing constantly. I should probably get
that clip. Oh, that's not good.
Well, he's coughy, yes, but then I'm watching him and he's coughing. I'm going to throw out a pro tip for all you podcasters and wannabes.
Here we go.
He picks up a glass of ice water with ice cubes in it and takes a big swig because he's coughing so much. If you have an issue coughing, you want tepid water.
Yes, tepid.
Ice water makes you cough more.
Tepid is the word of the day. Can you use tepid in a sentence?
You want tepid water.
Tepid
because
water.
If you keep drinking, I drink cold soda on this show and I'll start coughing near the end.
Yes.
But I know better. I just happen to like for it. But when I saw him and he kept picking this glass of ice water up and coughing more and more. And it was terrible.
Wrong.
But McGregor made the conclusion that our side, what the Washington side is very funny clip. Our side is so incompetent that we're the ones that are preventing anything from ending in Ukraine because we've got nobody that can even admit they were wrong or can do any negotiating. It's a mess. And so he predicts the worst. He doesn't see it ending like Haas would like to see it because our side has got a bunch of boneheads.
Well, then, because it's Thanksgiving, all of a sudden the Scandinavia shows up with some good news. One of our producers got this one through to me. It looks like the conservatives in the Canadian Parliament caught a fast one being pulled, which may have been one of the or it may still be one of the intended uses for Ukraine. Because, you know, Ukraine is going to be very useful. It's going to be useful for a lot. It's still going to be great for money laundering. It's still going to be great for crime, for cyber crime. It's still going to be fantastic for hookers and drugs. You know, it's, now it'll be more controlled. It'll be controlled by whoever ultimately controls Volodymyr. But a fast one was pulled.
Also in Ottawa, there was heated debate today in the House of Commons on the updated Canada-Ukraine Free Trade Agreement. The Conservatives voted en masse against the new legislation this week, and Leader Pierre Poilievre said the bill imposes a carbon tax on the people of Ukraine.
The pathological obsession these liberals have with carbon taxes has now reached a level where it is sick to impose their destructive carbon tax on the people of Ukraine.
To turn down a free trade agreement with a beacon of democracy like Ukraine. What is up with that party? That's what Canadians want to know. And this carbon tax excuse, no one's buying.
Help me understand this. Free trade legislation, free trade deals, they're mutually negotiated. But Pierre Poilievre is saying that Canada is imposing a carbon tax on Ukraine while they have a knife to their throat. What's the truth of this?
Okay, just a note that, of course, I work with but not for the Ukrainian government. Yes. But the point here being that is that's a peculiar and kind of disappointing interpretation. The fact is that, yes, this was a mutually negotiated agreement, and that it simply says that both sides will consult on and promote the idea of carbon pricing.
Which is the most important thing. They need to get a price on carbon. They've been trying this for a decade. And it sounds like
longer.
Well, that we've really been aware of it. This carbon pricing. So good one. Yeah, good one. Try to do some carbon pricing. Get a price on carbon. And by the way, just before we slip away from the pressure on Genocide Joe.
But I think I have a Ukraine clip.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. You got what you
banged the mic. I just banged the mic.
It's okay. Let me bang away.
Do I have a Ukraine?
I don't see a Ukraine clip.
No, I'm out of Ukraine clips. Well, I'll have one for Sunday.
Well, because you sent me an article, put it in the show notes, and I found another one. Because AIPAC is also leaning heavily on the Democrat Party in America.
You mean the American Israeli? APEC, as opposed to APAC, the meetup that you just had in San Francisco.
That's APEC. No, this is APAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee.
Right.
So they pretty much got a Republican in Michigan, but kicking the Democrat out. And why? Because the Democrat was like, oh, I like AOC. The squad's cool. They're great. Boom. So the Democrats out, the Republicans in, and now, and this is this just came through on Yahoo. This is horrible. AIPAC seeks to unseat congressional Black caucus members over Israel.
They get money.
Yes. So.
And the wherewithal, they have people that know how to do marketing.
Yeah. Well, it's all these politicians' own fault. They don't work for the people. They don't talk to the people. They talk to money. Yeah, and the parties. Oh, I need $1 million to be on a committee. It's also corrupt.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that for years.
Well, it's true.
It is true. You have to pay to be if you're the chairman of a major committee, you have to pay your party millions of dollars.
So you have to be raising millions of dollars all the time. Otherwise, you have no power, no influence. It's also cynical. So we need one of those melee guys or a Geert Wilders. Wait, we have one. Trump. The Dutch Trump. Well, we got the American Trump.
We have the American Trump.
Yeah, well, they are freaked out about the American Trump. And the best Trump hate is coming from MSNBC. Without a doubt. It's fantastic. Well, let's just stay with the Jew hate. Jen Psaki trying out a new hairdo, which is not working. She's trying to do flip up, flip downs, like flippy can't curls.
She looks like an idiot.
Yeah. she does look. You're right. You nailed it. And she had on the governor of Illinois, whose streets are filled with Genocide Joe protesters.
Which is great.
Pritzker, Jewish himself, to come on and talk, you know, because, you know, Trump is clearly Adolf Hitler. We just got to go back to that meme. Bring it back.
The migrant crisis, though, is front and center for a lot of people in this country on the border, but also states like Illinois. Are you worried that his talk tough approach is going to be appealing to some people in the country?
Jen, you know, I led the building of a Holocaust museum.
Woo! He built a Holocaust museum, ladies and gentlemen.
Which has what to do with Trump.
That just shows he's a good Jew.
Of a Holocaust museum. The rhetoric that's being used by Donald Trump, the rhetoric that's being used by some of the MAGA extremists, is rhetoric that was used in the 1930s.
When you call people from a political party extremists, is that not by itself rhetoric that has been used throughout dictatorial
from the 30s from Hitler? This guy's more like Hitler than Trump.
Some of the MAGA extremists is rhetoric that was used in the 1930s in Germany. Mm-hmm. I am very concerned about the direction of the country if we see policies like what Donald Trump is espousing come to light for our country.
Here comes.
I think you're referencing in part, he used the word vermin.
Whoa, vermin! He used the word vermin. Ah, and by the way, Trump does this purposefully, and as we call yum 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 yum, there's Psaki taking the bait.
Just recently, to describe who he was targeting as one of the leading Jewish governors in the country. I mean, what did you think when you heard that?
Wait, did she say one of the douche governors?
Yes, no. She said one of the. She said one of the leading douche governors of the country.
Well, it's just one in a long series of remarks, words that Donald Trump has used that are unfortunately reminiscent of, you know, the past.
Yes.
Let me just be clear.
Very, very reminiscent of the past.
In Germany in the 1930s, people that they didn't want to have power, people that they wanted to separate and segregate, they began calling them immigrants. Even people who were immigrants. Had been in Germany.
They began calling them immigrants.
What is he is he redesigning the whole World War II scenario here?
Yes.
With the immigrants bullcrap? This is not true.
Well, remember, he led the building of the Holocaust Museum, so.
Well, then he must be right.
Yes.
They began calling them immigrants. Even people who had been in Germany for generations, Jews who were doctors, lawyers in government at the time, became known as immigrants, even though they were German. Mm-hmm. And this is a way to begin to segregate people. And then eventually, at least what happened in Germany is that they turned it into a way to almost dehumanize.
Almost.
And then they did, in fact, dehumanize.
By calling them vermin?
And kill people. I don't know where it's going with Donald Trump. What I can tell you is the things that he talks about are frightening to those of us who know the history of Europe in the 1930s and 40s. And
now, could this be anything like calling people, calling for people to die if they want to go to the hospital, they have a heart attack because they're unvaccinated, people who don't wear masks, telling them to just die? Is that similar, calling them to what he's saying here? Just othering people in that way? Because I think he pretty much did that.
He basically said, if you don't get vaccinated, you can die.
Yes.
This guy, by the way, this Pritzker guy, is really the scum of the earth.
Oh, this whole family is horrible. And you said scum of the earth.
It's a horrible family.
What you just said is reminiscent of the 1930s. You called them scum of the earth.
I think it's reminiscent of an old novel I read.
And his sister, is at the base of this whole trans-Maoist movement.
Because they're the people that are funding much of it.
Yes. Yes.
His
that's anti-Semitic, by the way. You just called a Jew someone who's funding something bad, John. Bad, bad, bad.
Predilection for revenge and what that will mean for, you know, groups of
predilection for revenge. This is the problem.
People that didn't support him in the 2024 election, if in fact he gets elected.
What is going on here? And here's the next clip from Morning Joe again. The the establish the state, let's just call it the state, and it will. It's not necessarily Democrats. It's people in agencies, the people who have corrupted this country, our country, who've corrupted it. They are afraid because they know now. There's too much is out there. We've seen the Twitter files. You know, we understand fake news. You know, no agenda. Everyone listens to No Agenda and says, "Wow, that's all crap." You know, we're kind of part of the problem. But now they're all worried that Donald Trump will come in and is going to hang them.
If you want to be fair, then you will frame this as Joe Biden being the candidate that supports American democracy and Donald Trump, a candidate who supports a new form of government here, this authoritarian.
Huh. It's a new form of government.
A new form of government.
Called authoritarian. It's a new form. It's never been done before.
How does he manage to do that with the powers the balance of powers?
Well, we saw
that we have set up in this country with the justice and the legislator and the executive branches, the three branches. How does that work? How can that even be done?
We saw him
do it. I don't understand this. All I see, you go on the counter Mastodon, I mean, not our Mastodon, but you listen to the other guys, the other side, all the lefties who have quit Twitter in a huff, and all they do is say the same thing, that it's the end of democracy, it's the end of this, it's the end of that, if Trump gets in. But the system won't allow Trump to do much, as you saw the last time he was in.
How did that work when he had four years in the White House?
Changed?
No, the only thing he did was defend himself against Russian allegations most of the time. He wasn't able to do much. Well, I guess that was good work, everybody.
Form of government here, this authoritarian. It's really that simple. And by the way,
it's really that simple.
For now, when
it's
people
that simple.
It's that simple.
Oh, you can't compare the past kidding. Nazi leaders.
Wow, listen to Mika. She's like doing callbacks on the side. You know, she's like she's
call and response.
Call and response. Yes.
Like a black church.
Yes.
It's really that simple. And by the way, Reverend Allen, people go, "Oh, you can't compare the past Nazi leaders."
It's like diamond and silk.
You can't compare to this past Nazi leader or that past fascist leader because he hasn't done that. Well, what hasn't he done? He hasn't done the things that the American judicial system did not allow him to do last time, but may very well allow him to do this time. Or
what? So it didn't happen last time, but it's going to happen this time.
A judicial system that will be ignored by Donald Trump and ran over by Donald Trump.
You mean like all the executive orders Joe Biden did the minute he came into office, like that?
To create the greatest constitutional crisis of our lifetimes.
Whoa.
Just because he hasn't done it yet doesn't mean he won't do it when he gets a chance to do it.
And if I love that logic.
It gets better. Hold on.
Doesn't mean he won't do it when he gets a chance to do it. And if he is voted into office, then a lot of these people that are talking about literal or figurative or whatever the hell they're saying, you're going to look like idiots. Because he will imprison, he will execute whoever he's allowed.
He's going to execute people. He's going to kill. They're going to hang them.
To imprison.
Guillotines.
Execute. Drive from the country. Just look at his past.
Yeah, where he executed everybody. He did.
He had a gun, pulled it out, and shot him in the Oval Office.
He didn't even lock up Hillary Clinton. Come
he
on.
He let Hillary go without any issue at all.
But then comes, this is my final Trump hate clip. But then comes, now this is kind of dangerous. When you start saying this stuff, I mean, just imagine if a MAGA Republican had said this. This is Representative Daniel Goldman, who I believe is from California. Is Goldman from California?
I don't know. We have hundreds.
All right.
So there's been so much speculation, contemplation, discussion of what Trump wanted to do.
Discussion, contemplation.
What he knew or didn't know. I mean, do you think as a prosecutor, this is something that could be useful in the case against Trump? How will it be used?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, he says I would be well received because he knows that the people who were there are his supporters who he riled up and incited to invade and riot at the Capitol and try to disrupt the proper counting of the Electoral College votes. So every time he talks, he's putting himself into a bigger criminal hole. That's not his objective. His objective is purely political at this point. Politics don't work in a courtroom, as I think he's finding out in the New York Attorney General case in New York, a civil case, and that's going to continue in his criminal trials. But his rhetoric is really getting dangerous, more and more dangerous. And we saw what happened on January 6th when he uses inflammatory rhetoric.
When he told everybody to stop it, when he said peaceful, don't do anything crazy. That rhetoric is when we saw what happened when he was said, please don't do it.
Happened on January 6th when he uses inflammatory rhetoric now, and his recent social post is incredibly scary for anyone that might be trying to work in government.
What's and laugh for?
Because I don't know. It's because it's not really scary. He's lying.
It's incredibly
because he's projecting is really what's going on.
Incredibly scary for anyone that might be trying to work in government. And
that's interesting. He was going to say operate. But then he said work in government. I don't know. Maybe the laugh cell was weird. You're right.
Is incredibly scary for anyone that might be trying to work in government. Mm. And it is just unquestionable at this point that man cannot see public office again. He is not only unfit, he is destructive to our democracy, and he has to be eliminated.
Oh, yeah.
Eliminated.
I think that's a threat that the Secret Service should look into.
It's Trump. You can say whatever you want. Do you see my bit on Psaki? I said Trump should be eliminated. Touch me.
So
crazy.
I only have two Trump clips, which are base clips about the everyone freaking out over his numbers going up.
Oh, no. Oh, no. His numbers are going up. This NTD.
Yeah.
Yet another win for former President Trump in a major poll. Trump's presidential campaign has been a success so far. Congress, meanwhile, is a bit less successful. Dozens of lawmakers are resigning, some out of frustration. NTD's Ariane Pastar brings you an election update.
Former President Trump is widening his lead over President Biden in a hypothetical 2024 matchup. That's according to the prominent Emerson College poll. In November last year, the poll found that Biden was leading over Trump with 45% to 41%. A month ago, Trump was leading with 47% to 45%. Now, Trump's lead increased by 2 points to 47% to 43%. Biden took a big hit in support among minorities, losing a total of 26 percentage points over the last year. Meanwhile, at Congress, California Representative Anna Eshoo this week announced that she's stepping down after 3 decades. So far, over 30 lawmakers this year announced that they're not seeking re-election. This comes after 2 exhausting House Speaker races, 2 near government shutdowns, and multiple attempts to impeach, censor, or expel officials. And all that while Congress is still in its first session. Various lawmakers are disappointed with the way things are going on the Hill. Representative Earl Blumenauer, who has been in Congress for over 25 years, told Punch Bowl News, "It's insane and it adds no value to my life. The things I care about, I can do better not here."
So, NTD, are the Chinese just making the AI people now? This guy, very robotic read.
You see these guys and they don't look like they sound. That's what's weird about it.
Well, it's definitely.
I mean, it's like this is diversity in action. This is true diversity.
It's kind of off-putting.
Why should everyone sound like the same guy?
Well, okay, but it sounds like a robot.
There's a part two to this.
Now over to local elections. In South Carolina, the city of Charleston voted for a Republican mayor for the first time since 1877. That's almost 150 years. Former South Carolina GOP Representative William Coxwell won the race on Tuesday. And in New York, former Governor Andrew Cuomo is reportedly considering running for mayor of New York City.
Yay!
That's according to Politico, which says that Cuomo might run if current Mayor Eric Adams resigns or decides not to run for re-election.
Ooh, there was the R word in there.
And there goes our guy.
No, we can't have that.
No, we need that guy.
Now, that's interesting because, you know, first of all, I think Eric Adams got kicked out of the club because he said, hey, this is not working, New York City. But, you know, this is going to cost us too much money. Cardi B hates him now.
Cardi B hating
you, then that's pretty bad. And then, in fact,
it's a clip we'd play, but it's so profane.
It's all F words.
Forget it.
And he was like, well, you know, this is no good. These migrants, and they kicked him out of the club. They sent him on a re-education tour, and now they're investigating his largest fundraiser. This guy's gonna get knocked out, and he's gonna get thrown into one of those Hochul prison camps.
Yeah,
I mean, New York, get out of New York.
There's some good clips floating around about New York and the prison camps. Now, back to the election and Trump and versus Biden. I do have a couple of clips from the birthday. Biden just had a birthday.
Hey, is it 81?
He's
81?
Now 92. No.
What Come is on it? Now. Let's not be ageist.
81. So he was on, and Fox and Friends, it's Fox Weekend. They just botched everything. I mean, I have to say,
really?
And I'm listening to Fox.
Why?
Why? And they are just making mistakes left and right.
Ugh.
And I want you to I'm going to play these clips, and I'm going to be very critical here, Fox, for people who think that we like Fox.
I've ever liked Fox.
No, and you in particular.
Yeah, because run by Democrats. We all know it.
Yeah, it's run by Democrats. So I want to play, this is the Biden B-Day rap gaffe, and I want you should be able to spot the gaffes. There's
by the
two
way,
of
can
them.
I can I just when I say run, I have no hate against Democrats, I really don't. But the Democrat system, just like the Republican system, the jackoffs, all of them. Okay, back to you, Bob.
So let's go with Biden birthday. What are you apologizing for?
I just want people to understand that I love
that
all.
You don't
people.
Hate Democrats?
No, I don't hate people who vote Democrat.
You don't hate
all.
People. Okay, well, you're people. A lover, not a hater.
Hey, TooManyEggs.com.
Too many.
That's too my many out.
That's my out. Christmas gifts. Come on.
That's my out.
Biden birthday right now. I think the gaffe's right away, and then we can see. You'll spot it, but you might not.
President Biden landed on the South Lawn here at the White House just a short time ago, and it's safe to say there's going to be no surprise 81st birthday party for him tonight here at the White House. And when the clock strikes 12, and probably not tomorrow either, with all expected to be a low-key affair, with all focus on the turkey pardon, maybe a shot of wild turkey for the staff. But here is what David Axelrod told the New York Times about President Biden. Quote, I think he has a 50-50 shot here, but no better than that, maybe a little worse. He thinks he can cheat nature here, and it's really risky. They've got a real problem if they're counting on Trump to win it for them. I remember Hillary doing that too. Now on Fox News Sunday, Senator Chris Coons responded to Axelrod.
That's an interesting point from David. In 2007, a year out from the 2008 election, I'll remind you that poll after poll was showing that Barack Obama was going to lose to Rudy Giuliani, and in 2011 that Barack Obama was going to lose to Mitt Romney. Head-to-head polls a year out, frankly, don't say much at all.
Now, a recent article in Politico by Jonathan Martin titled, Here's How Biden Can Turn It Around. Top Democrats agree that the president needs more aggressiveness, more help from his friends, and a few more friends. Liz Cheney, Rahm Emanuel, and Mitt Romney can help. Says the president has had issues with Axelrod in the past. The piece warns, quote, calling David Axelrod a P-word that I've been told I'm not supposed to say on news here. It rhymes with stick, Lisa. As a person who has heard Biden use the word, says he does in private, is not a strategy to win 270 electoral votes. Now, there's a new NBC poll out today shows that at 80 years old, soon to be 81, by the way, tonight at the stroke of midnight, by not having the necessary mental and physical health to be president for a second term, 59% say that's a major concern.
Well, first of all, did Biden run against Giuliani?
No, of course not. He ran against McCain.
I was going to say, like, how that was the gaffe, right?
Yeah, and the gaffe was here's the thing about the gaffe. It was Giuliani was never really in the picture that year.
No.
So you can't say, well,
Ron,
you know,
Ron Paul was in the picture more than Giuliani. Yeah,
but here's the thing about the gaffe. Chris Coombs is Biden's campaign manager.
I didn't know that.
So that's one aspect of this. Yeah. The second thing is you've got four people on this show sitting at the dais. None of them caught that. And then you have another five people minimum, in the control room with people in their ears. None of them caught it. There's a floor manager. He didn't catch it.
Hey, tell him
what is wrong with this place?
Oh, well, wait, you're telling me that cable news is full of crap? Oh, imagine.
So here we go. Imagine. There's a second gaffe coming up that is just right part of this first gaffe. And it's just like, it blows by everybody. Here we go with part two.
15% say it's a moderate concern, whatever that means. 12% minor concern, and 14% say it's no real concern. And by the way, that poll also showed Biden with the lowest approval rating of his presidency, guys.
Well, you know, they've had 80 years to prepare for it. I hope it's a great party tonight, tomorrow. Thank you, Lucas.
Well, 81.
Yeah. Well, but he just starts his 81st year, so they've had only 80 years to prepare for it.
I didn't know what that was about.
It was idiotic. He's on his 82nd year. He says they've had 80 years to prepare for it, and the girl says no, 81, because he's 81, so he's had 81 years he's been in business for 81 years. It's like when you're a 1 year old, you're not starting your first birthday. You're already one. You're going to two.
You know what's happening is you're watching these shows and you're getting riled up just like they are. You're like listening to Twitter.
But it's the idiocy of
yes.
this. The fact that he calls her out and says no, he's gonna be. He says no. He's working on his 81st year. He says to her, and she as I don't want to say it, but as a submissive woman, apparently.
Whoa! Here we go.
She backs off to the male's intent, who's full of shit, by the way. This guy.
Dog,
and she doesn't say anything, and the other female that's on the panel doesn't say anything, and the other male, who I think might even be Gutfeld, but it's not. It's somebody else.
No. That's he.
No, Gutfeld's only on the five.
Yeah.
And so but it's somebody else, and nobody calls the guy on this bullshit. In fact, I have to follow up what happens right afterwards, which is just wanders off.
Have you considered?
And this is stunning to me that this is so stupid on Fox.
Yeah, but you can't watch this. This is not healthy for you.
You play this third part.
Only 80 years to prepare for it. Dr. Sapphire, you know, explain this to us. I mean, you know, at this kind of age, he's going to be 86 if he were to win another term and finish it. What are the problems? I mean, what could go wrong here?
Anything can go wrong with any single person any day of the week.
But hey, he's handing you the alley-oop, lady. What you're supposed to say is he could die. Wasn't that the alley-oop right there? What could go wrong? He's 81. What could possibly? By the way, that's also ageist. I don't like any of it. That's not nice.
That's his Fox.
It's
Fox is really deteriorated.
Yes. Ever since Tucker left. Ever since Megyn Kelly left.
Actually, I think you could probably trace it back to Megyn Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
But she left. It was her fault for the whole thing because she was all in on the Me Too thing that was going on at the station to get rid of the guy who started the whole thing.
Let's talk about something we know about.
We know about this.
We know about it. Well, first, I need to congratulate and commend you for being right for 4 days.
Yeah, I was right for four whole days.
You called it. You called it. You called it. Everybody was like, wow. And usually they attribute that to me, but they got it right. Like, John, really, you called it. Sam Altman going to Microsoft. I mean, you nailed it. The clip was very clear. Like you said, oh, yeah, Microsoft sucks these guys right up. And I was like, wow, there you go. That's perfect. And then things started to change. And this is I have a lot of thoughts on this, as you can imagine, because we've uncovered so much about what was really going on at OpenAI. And I think we are, in fact, at peak AI hype. And I have a feeling all of this is about to fall apart quicker than we expected. But first, let us listen to the experts of finance over at CNBC, led by Andrew Ross Sorkin, who, of course, is one of the co-creators of the hit show Billions on Showtime, explain what's going on.
Let's talk about the big news that broke overnight, because a lot of folks...
By the way, this is big news. You know, the world stopped. Kara Swisher, your protege, was running around on Twitter going, I called it! I called it! I'm great! I'm the best reporter ever! Look at my reporting! I'm so proud of my reporting! She's really unconscionable. She's hard.
She's constantly spiking the ball.
You know, what happened?
Into a mosh pit.
Do you think that as a child, no one ever told her she was worthy or something? Because you're right. All she's doing is spiking the ball. And then he's going to Microsoft. I called it. He's not going to Microsoft. This is my great reporting. I've got Satya Nadella on. Oh, I have an exclusive interview. Satya Nadella is on every single channel doing interviews. Anyway, back to the boy genius.
I think you and she should get a room.
I would give her a piece of my mind, that's for sure.
Let's talk about the big news that broke overnight, because a lot of folks focused on it already this morning. OpenAI posting on X that Sam Altman will now officially return as CEO. Former Salesforce CEO Bret Taylor and former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers will join AI's Open's board. Taylor was named board chair, and then Quora's CEO Adam D'Angelo will remain on the board. Altman posted on X, I love OpenAI, and everything I've done over the past few days has been in service of keeping this team and its mission together. When I decided to join Microsoft on Sunday evening, it was clear that was the best path for me and the team. With the new board and with Satya's support, I'm looking forward to returning to OpenAI and building on our strong partnership with Microsoft. Now, in response, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella posting in part, quote, we encouraged by the changes to the OpenAI board. We believe this is a first essential step on a path to a more stable, well-informed and effective governance. And ousted chairman Greg Brockman posting returning to OpenAI and getting back to coding tonight. So he hit the keyboard.
All right. So,
he
hit the keyboard. So the couple of things happening here. One, no one is talking about the board that just got wiped off the face of the map, including Helen Toner, all of these effective altruism, all members, possibly members of the crazy sex cults in San Francisco with the polycules. Who knows what's going on there? That board just got wiped out, except for the Adam D'Angelo, I think. He's friends with Satya Nadella. That may be his guy for now. So now they have a 3-person board.
Mole.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, Mole.
He's the mole. Then you have Larry Summers. I mean, so what is...
Yeah, what the hell's that guy doing in there?
I mean, he got a big check to be a part of this.
I checked everybody. I mean, Larry Summers is the only counsel on foreign relations guy in there. So he might be just a guy who's like a spook.
Well, so... Now,
keeping an eye on things.
Well, yes. And I think what I'm starting to feel here is that OpenAI and Sam Altman is just marketing. The marketing was, let's get everybody all crazy about AI, throw out your ChatGPT-3, which really is not impressive. Yes, it can answer you like you're human, but you know it's unusable for reliability in all aspects. Don't worry, ChatGPT-4 will be better. Don't worry, we've got generative AI. Oh, we've got sentient AI. It's all coming. And he's like the Elizabeth Holmes of this stuff. And he just has that complicated talk, you know, like, I think that AI will, if we don't do it right, it could be dangerous to the world, which is why we at OpenAI are working right to do this kind of thing. But I see the, I'm just, he's not a coder. He's just a talker. He's like Elon Musk.
Like one of the main coders is this Ilya guy who is the one who was responsible for getting him ousted, if you look into it.
Yes.
And I think he's gone. And he's like the Russian kid also got a very weird background. He's been all over the place. And he seems more like the guy who actually knows how this thing works.
But besides the copyright violations of written word and images, it's just not impressive. You know, you've got competitors to ChatGPT also using already opening up app stores so you can load all. It's like, okay, so we could load all the no agenda information in there and we could go in and we could say, what did Adam and John say about this? And it would pop something out. It may be right. You know, we have
Bing. Maybe wrong.
It being at .io, it does kind of the same thing already. You can decide for yourself. But then, as I'm listening to the brilliant journalist, always spot on, who does journalism, Kara Swisher, with her great get, Satya Nadella, 2 days after he's been on Bloomberg, he's been on CNBC, and she's trying to goad him in. And this Satya Nadella, what a character this guy is. Yay! Everything's great! Yay! You know, it's like, it's all fine! Everything's fine! There's nothing wrong! Yay! Hey. Microsoft! This is how he talks.
Yeah, and he's got the stock jacked up.
Yes, and I understand.
He's really good.
And I understand why, because what is the big story of AI? It's not AI. It's that companies like Microsoft can sucker people into compute resources using their Azure cloud. That's what this is about. It's not about AI. It's about selling cloud cycles and services. And the whole OpenAI valuation is some hyped up bull crap.
And our partners and customers, whether they're using OpenAI or Microsoft, but the point is we were very confident in our own ability. We have all the IP rights and all the capability. I mean, look
right.
if OpenAI disappeared, I don't want any customer of ours to be worried about it, quite honestly. Because
wait a minute. So if OpenAI disappears tomorrow, it's no problem. We got all the IP. We got all the people. We've got all the compute sites. Because we don't need them except to act as a buffer in case there's a lawsuit or to blame something on.
I don't want any customer of ours to be worried about it, quite honestly, because we have all of the rights to continue the innovation, not just to serve the products. Sure. But we can, you know, go and just do what we were doing in partnership ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so
we don't need those guys.
The people, we have the compute, we have the data, we have everything.
We got everything. We don't need those guys. In fact, Sam Altman, go back to home base.
But at the same time, I'm committed to OpenAI partnership, and that's kind of what I expressed to them.
And where does that stand? Because you have invested, is it $13 billion or $12 billion in the company?
Very interesting question. Did they really invest $12 billion? Well, no.
It's a complicated thing.
Yeah,
we have a significant investment. It sort of comes in the form of not just dollars, but it comes in the form of compute and what have you. And that gives us significant rights.
They gave them $10 billion worth of compute, which.
Yes, exactly.
Which is what? Is that the retail price? Is
probably.
That
the whole?
No, that's probably retail times 10. It could be.
You know, here's the thing you kind of stumbled on. I want to mention before you finish this clip. He had Altman over there, and then he had to analyze, or the company itself, or its lawyers had to say, look, and I don't know if anyone's familiar with something called a shim. A shim is software code to keep you, for example, if you're using one of these GNU Linux or something like that, and any kind of one of these GNU products, if you use it, you have to give up your rights to it, and you have to give all these rights up. So people design software code that's called a shim, which is something to place you between liability, having been liable, and the company, the GNU guys. So this is kind of what he's must have been thinking when he said, yeah, when he hired Altman over, and he said, no, you go back and do it over there, because that prevents us. If there's some we're the deep pockets here.
Yes.
If there's some major lawsuit, you guys, you know, for
you
copyright violation or whatever,
you eat it.
You guys can eat it and just go out of business. We'll hire you back then, and you can do some little thing on the side here, but we can't be even close to this kind of liability. So they create a shim, something to buffer them from the what's bound to happen, which is, and you always complain about this, it's bound to happen. A big, giant lawsuit that can take him out.
Well, just announced yesterday, nonfiction authors sue OpenAI for copyright infringement. That's just the beginning. That's just the beginning. Because they've all said, no, we've sucked in all of your information, but that's fair use, you see. And
it's fair use. It cracks me up. This was actually going to happen, and this is going to be a Supreme Court case eventually, because the fair use law, which we have these clips. These are all fair use because they're very small snippets of what goes on for an hour.
That's not what determines fair use. Fair use is if it's in an educational setting, if you are using.
It's also a different use.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's a fair use if we play a clip, we are in an educational news gathering setting. Doesn't even have to be that.
Yes, there's a lot of, there's a deep definition.
Yes.
But sucking everything up and then regurgitating it
fair use. It's not fair use.
I can see where you'd think it was. I'll make the argument. So I'm the AI. And so I've sucked up every novel by Ernest Hemingway, and I've decided to write an essay that in the style of Ernest Hemingway. And so the AI, as the AI, I crank out let's say 2,500 word piece. But I have sucked up, 5 million words. So I'm only taking 2,500 words out of 5 million, and let's say the piece is educational, or it's different enough, or it's humorous. Because a lot of fair use.
Parody is allowed.
Parodies are all allowed. Free game. Mm-hmm. So what did I do wrong?
Well, I would say go talk to Vanilla Ice. Go talk to, what's the guy who did Robin Thicke? I mean, in music, this is well established. You use one little sample, one little lick, one little riff, and you got a lawsuit on your hands. Now, the thing is, OpenAI, it's questionable whether they have any actual revenue. Yeah, they say, we got 100 million people paying us $20 a month. Questionable. We don't really know that. But that's even that is chump change to Satya Nadella. What he wants, and I know because my buddy Vic, he has an integration company. He sells this stuff, Microsoft, mainly to call centers. But the AI that is going to come with Microsoft will be transcripts of meetings, especially your team, Microsoft team meetings. You get a transcript. It'll have action items, and then the action items will automatically be put on your calendar. Woo! That's the kind of stuff we're talking about. Oh, I see your it's Clippy on steroids.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
Clippy on steroids. You have to see a beefed up Clippy. Someone wants to do some art for that. but today's art has to be Thanksgiving art. So
yeah. So someone, it'll be like, oh, I see you're trying to write a letter scolding your underling here in the organization. Let me help you write that. Yeah, it'll be fine. And what they're selling, what Microsoft will be selling, and I know this firsthand, is compute cycles to suck in all of your company's data. So let's say you have, it could be a law office, but it could be any, it could just be, you sell fireworks for a living. Doesn't matter. It'll, suck up all that data. What is the most resource intensive is creating the large language model, the LLM. So you create your own LLM, which has to be fine-tuned. You get all kinds of expensive guys like Comic Strip Blogger because that's what he does, to fine-tune it all. That costs millions of dollars, particularly in very expensive compute resources, which is all Azure Cloud. And then probably retrieve some pretty reliable information about your organization. You could also just hire a couple people who know what the heck they're doing. So this is all some kind of pipe dream. But Microsoft, our customers. Their customers aren't waiting for some robot to come in and do their business. No, their customers are wanting a better script for the call center. This is not impressive This is not what people think it is. And I think we are at peak AI. Let's continue.
It's a complicated thing. Yeah, it's we have a significant investment. It sort of comes in the form of not just dollars, but it comes in the form of compute and what have you. Right. And that gives us significant rights, as I said. And also this thing, it's not a hands off, right? We are in there. We are below them, above them, around them. We do the kernel optimizations. We build tools. We build the infrastructure. Yeah. So that's why I think
we don't need them.
Some of the industry analysts are saying, oh, wow, there is this. It's really a joint project between Microsoft and OpenAI. And the reality is we are, as I said, very self-sufficient in all of this.
So this is completely the new blockchain. This is Satya Nadella telling us, look, we own those guys lock, stock, and barrel, but they're, you're right, our shim. So in case anything comes along that we don't like, and Altman already did his work. His work was to get protections for the largest companies with the largest compute cycles, i.e. Amazon's AWS, Microsoft Azure, and Google. Because anything that's created has to be done by those guys to make sure that your AI for your fireworks company doesn't eat the world because, oh, it's a robot. It's so smart. Bull crap. And to accentuate this, for 14 hours, they had an interim CEO, Emmett Shear. Emmett Shear was the CEO of Twitch. And so this gives you an idea of the insanity of these spun up, just crazy people inside the, not just OpenAI, but the entire AI universe, how nuts they are. He's sitting down for a podcast with Redpoint. You know, this is a new thing now with, you and I know a bit about venture capital guys. You know, we've been around, we've raised money. And so now all the venture capital guys, they'll have a junior partner, and the junior partner does the podcast. He does the podcast for the VC. So this is some, you know, minor limited partner douche who's interviewing Emmett Shear about AI, and he's like, he's agreeing with everything. Of course, because, you know, they got money into AI. Oh, yes, please give us money. We'll invest it for you in AI projects. This thing is coming apart at the seams. Listen to this. This is probably my favorite techno douche of all time, Emmett Shear.
Generally, I am very pro-technology, and I really believe the upsides usually outweigh the downsides. Everything technology can be misused. Regulating early is usually a mistake. I have a very specific concern about AI. We've built an intelligence. It's kind of amazing, actually. It may not be the smartest intelligence, but it is an intelligence. It can solve problems and make arbitrary plans. At some point, as it gets better, the kinds of problems it will be able to solve will include programming, chip design, material science, power production, all of the things you would need to design an artificial intelligence. At that point, you'll be able to point the thing we've built back at itself. And this will happen before you get that point with humans in the loop. It already is happening with humans in the loop. But that loop will get tighter and tighter and tighter and faster and faster and faster until it can fully self-improve itself, at which point it will get very fast, very quickly.
Now, just so we understand what he's saying, we're going to build something that has some intelligence. It solves problems. We're going to point it at itself, and then it will start developing itself into sentient being.
And that kind of intelligence is just an intrinsically very dangerous thing.
Dangerous!
Because intelligence is power.
Power!
Human beings are the dominant form of life on this planet pretty much entirely because we're smarter than the other creatures. Now, I just laid out a chain of argument with a lot of if this, then this, if this, then this, if this.
Okay. John, could you lay out a chain of argument with a lot of if this, then this, please?
Human beings are the dominant form of life on this planet pretty much entirely because we're smarter than the other creatures.
Now,
I just laid out a chain of argument with a lot of if this, then this, if this, then this, if this, then this. I know Elizer thinks that, like, we're all doomed for sure. I buy his doom argument. I buy the chain and the logic. Like my P doom, my probability of doom.
Okay. I buy
P doom. I love P doom.
I love the chain of logic and the P doom. He is okay. So that chain of logic and my P doom is a little different than his P doom.
Sure. I buy his doom argument. I buy the chain and the logic. Like my P doom, my probability of doom, is like my bid ask spread, and that's pretty high because I have a lot of uncertainty. But
John, what's your bid ask spread? What's your bid ask spread?
Oh my God, is this guy just nothing but cliches?
I've never even heard this one. So he's
well, bid. I've never I know heard what a bid ask. It's a stock market.
Yes, but he has a bid ask spread of probability of doom. His P doom.
I buy his doom argument. I buy the chain and the logic. Like my P doom, my probability of doom is like my bid ask spread, and that's pretty high because I have a lot of uncertainty. But I would say it's like between like 5 and 50.
5 and 50. That's quite the spread, young man.
So there's a wide spread.
Which I think Paul Cristiano.
Oh, here's the VC douche piping in.
5 and 50. So there's a wide spread.
Which I think Paul Cristiano.
50. You know,
Paul Cristiano, who handled.
Hold on a second. You back it up. But why? He says it's a large spread. But what does the 5 represent, and what does the 50 represent?
It's these guys that are just talking out of their butthole.
It's unbelievable.
So his bid as so this 5% that I don't know. I really don't know. And then this other guy says, well, you know, that guy, his bid ask spread is different. No wonder these VCs lost their ass on FTX with Sam Bankman-Fried. They let these people come in who either talk like this guy or talk like Altman. I'm a complicated talker because, you know, I'm a deep, deep thinker. Or like Elon Musk. Well, you know, AI could eat the world, right? If we don't have guardrails, it's very important to do that. These people are full of crap.
5 and 50. So there's a wide spread.
Which I think Paul Cristiano,
50, you know,
Paul Cristiano, who handled, you know, a lot of the stuff within OpenAI, I think said 25 to 50. It seems like if you talk to most AI researchers, there's some preponderance of people that give some percentage.
That should cause you to shit your pants.
But it's human-level extinction.
I'm shitting my pants.
No, it's not just human-level extinction. It's such extincting humans is bad enough. It's like potential destruction of all value in the light code. Like not just for us, but for any species caught in the wake of the explosion. It's like a universe destroying bomb. This is not a figure it out later thing. This is like a big fucking problem. It's like someone invented a way to make like 10x more powerful fusion bombs out of like sand and bleach that like anyone could do at home.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. And I've had enough time with it now that I can laugh about it. When I first realized, it was fucking heart-stopping.
Heart-stopping technology. It's not just, it used to be disruptive. Now it's heart stopping because the P doom bid and ask spread is out of control. Oh, that's right. That's right. How much do we invest in you? It's so bad that Bobby the Op, RFK Jr., is all in on this stuff too.
Look, I know you.
This is his own campaign video that he put on X.
Look, I know you know a lot about AI, right? And you know how dangerous.
And he's talking to Lex Fridman. You know, another one of these guys, complicated talkers. I'm from MIT and I wear a black suit with a black tie for all my interviews. Now, you know, I'm from Russia, right? AI, we have to have guardrails.
Look, I know you know a lot about AI, right? And you know how dangerous it is potentially to humanity and what opportunity is it also. But it could kill us all. I mean, Elon said first it's going to steal our job, then it's going to kill us. And it's probably not hyperbole. It's actually, you know, if it follows the laws of biological evolution, which are just the laws of mathematics, that's probably a potential endpoint. But we need to make sure it's regulated, and it's regulated properly for safety in every country, and that includes Russia and China. We should be putting all the weapons of war aside and sitting down with those guys and say, how are we going to do this? There's much more important things to do. This stuff is going to kill us if we don't figure out how to regulate it. And leadership needs to look down the road at what is the real risk here. And the real risk is that AI will, you know, enslave us.
Yeah, you lost my vote, Bobby the Op.
Boy, I'll say.
Love. There he goes. AI will enslave. And I think, and I'm obviously not a programmer. I barely hacked together the first podcast script. I think, you know, programmers always talk about recursion. And that is what that Emmett Shear was basically saying. It's like we turn the AI.
Yeah, with the thing looking at itself.
But it's always degenerative. It's like when you hold a mirror up against the mirror at a certain point, it's just no good. It's infinity and you don't
get it.
Yes,
exactly.
It goes away. I think mathematically.
At the back, you put the two mirrors up and you see way in the back, you can see it's barely a mess.
Recursion freezes the system. It never, in fact,
it doesn't get better.
No, it always gets worse. And he's saying, you know, his bid ask spread, his P doom factor is based upon, I think, this mathematical fallacy that, oh, we'll turn it on itself. No, I just don't think so. Anyway, now the only people who are talking about what was really going on in this OpenAI company, and I'm thinking Satya Nadella. He turned Microsoft around. He took it from Ballmer's mess and turned it around into a powerhouse.
Ballmer's mess wasn't really much of a mess. It was a stable operation that had no pizzazz.
I apologize. The stock price was stagnant.
Yeah, it was stagnant.
It was like
Ballmer
a
60. Was not. You know, ever since he left his programmers or whatever it was, jumping up and down days, ever since those days left the company, the excitability was he was basically just too calm.
And that's saying a lot about Ballmer.
Yeah.
So Satya Nadella, who has been at Microsoft for a quarter of a century, probably, he did. I mean, you could see it coming. He made Microsoft exciting. It's also, I mean, in my opinion, Windows is horrible. It's never been as bad as it is now. You know, Windows has become an app and it's talking to Microsoft. I just hate it.
Too much. Yeah.
So wait, but the excitement is there. And then Azure, when cloud became a thing, he saw that he needed something to ignite the cloud service. And this is his fuel that he throws on the fire. Yes, because he's telling all his customers, you better get in on this AI stuff now because
it chews up a lot of cycles.
Yes, it chews up cycles and we need you to pay for that. If you've ever rented a server from Amazon Web Services, you know how expensive it can get very, very quickly unless you really know what you're doing. And I think he saw this Altman character and went, I should have clipped it, but Kara Swisher was even asking Nadella, well, isn't Altman the kind of guy who could become the CEO of Microsoft? Nadella's looking at this like, what, are you insane, woman? Altman is a weirdo. He's a marketing guy, just like Elon Musk. I've always said Elon Musk hasn't invented anything new. He has that complicated Elizabeth Holmes talk, except Elizabeth Holmes really didn't have anyone to execute. Elon's got people who execute all over the place.
And yeah, Altman, he knows how to hire.
And Altman, it's clear now to me, he wanted to move ahead. He said, we're going to do the App Store because there's no other sex that's left. There's no sexiness left in OpenAI other than you can create your own apps. And they have SDKs and toolkits, and all of it crunches up Azure compute cycles. This is the industry they're trying to bamboozle everybody with. And the only people still looking at the nut jobs in OpenAI, effective altruists, is the techno douches from France 24. And so now, and it's rampant there, because now the techno chick is going to explain it to us.
Let me just ask you that, Julia. What do you think has been happening?
Well, Nadia, it was that the official reason of his early dismissal is still unclear. But in the backdrop of all of this, you have this battle between two different currents of thought on how to develop AI. On one hand, you have what we call people who are in the effective altruism current. So what that means is that you're for the development of AI, but to answer, let's say, general interest questions for the greater good of the world. And they tend to be in favor of regulation. On the other, you have what we call effective accelerationism. So here the goal is really to advance technologically as quickly as possible and to deal with problems as they emerge.
So there you have it. Altman was in a different cult. He was in effective accelerism. Have you ever heard of something so stupid? effective accelerism. Okay.
In real time, and they tend to be against regulation. So, of course, this is simply put, but you can understand the dilemma of companies who, by wanting to be a little bit too ethical, they also risk to lose the market share. Now, what's been said about Sam Altman is that he could have been transitioning towards a more accelerationist vision, which could have divided OpenAI's board members. Now, you have to understand that most companies who work in the AI sector are actually in a frantic race to go towards what we call general artificial intelligence. So an artificial intelligence that would surpass us as humans in all tasks and all domains. Now, of course, Nadia, we're not there yet. We shouldn't even be talking about artificial intelligence. Most of the time, we should refer to deep learning, machine learning. So when algorithms are using data to train themselves, but there isn't any intelligence there per se.
What? There's no intelligence? What? Oh, no, techno chick, do tell me more.
So it's impressive, Julia, but we know that there are big challenges as well.
Of course, there are. It's very imperfect. There's what we call algorithmic bias. So this is when the AI is going to reflect the bias in the data that it uses to train itself and the data of the bias of the data scientists. There's problem. There's a lack of transparency, which is huge, especially when we talk about deep neural networks. So these are neural networks are trying to mimic the human brain in the way that it actually thinks. And
I love that. These people, there's some actual thought in Silicon Valley. Yeah, we can do better than the brain. Yeah, we can do better than that. I mean, people only use a certain, although that's been debunked, but you know, it's like, yeah, we can do better. We can do better than God in this. It's no problem. We can create neural pathways.
And here it's very opaque. We don't know how the decision process is happening. So what's the decision tree, for instance? Of course, we're talking
about the decision tree. We're back to skip logic, John. There it is. The decision. What's the decision tree here? Who plants the seed for the decision tree?
What's the decision tree, for instance? Of course, we're talking about data. So there's security and confidentiality issues, ethical issues when we're talking about autonomous decision making by machines. There's, ooh, of course, accountability issues if there are errors.
Yeah, that goes to OpenAI.
And we often talk about this, and I think it's very important. It's the impact, of course, on employment. Because of this automation powered by AI, it's going to disrupt, many jobs. And so these are all of the problems. But of course, there's the other side of the coin. It's going to revolutionize so many sectors. Let's take just one example.
Yeah, please.
The health sector. Now we're talking about early diagnosis thanks to AI. We're talking about predictive health. We're talking about personalized treatment. That's going to reduce cost. It's going to reduce side effects for patients. And ultimately, it's going to save lives. So I think before it
says
actually
who
replaces us completely, it's really going to start, assisting us at least in the tasks that we have on a daily basis.
No, it's not. This is the medical smart systems that were developed in the 80s. Expert systems was the term back then.
Ooh,
in the 80s.
Ooh, do tell.
Remember that?
No. Give us some history. I love hearing about this.
Oh, yeah. The expert did. This is the last time we had this flirtation with artificial intelligence was in the 80s with the fifth generation computing and all the rest of it. And they had all the Stanford had a big lab and MIT had a big lab. And they were working on all this stuff. And one of the things they came up with was expert systems. And expert systems was exactly what they're talking about, what she's kind of talking about, where the medical was going to be transformed by expert systems. And you put your symptoms into the computer, and the computer with its AI, was AI at the time, which was an expert system, would come back with a diagnosis. And this was, 45 years ago?
That actually has come back. It's interesting you bring that up, because I heard on my hate list, and I won't play it. This was a couple weeks back. They had on a guy, clearly, was meant to be promoted on their show, and he had developed kiosks. Yes, kiosks where you walk into the kiosk and the AI goes, "What is your problem?" And then you say, "Well, I got a scratchy throat." It says, "Put on this sensor." And then you strap a sensor on, and then poop, it'll say, "You need this," and it'll pop out a pill for you to take. This is the same thing. I'm not going to use it. So they got rid of
if you want free pills.
they got rid of the Helen Toner, who was Australian, not British. Thank you for correcting me, everybody. They got rid of all those kooks. And then put Sam back in, And he's, you're right, he's the shim. So you sit there, you sit pretty, and then if you get sued out of
existence, all hell breaks loose. Yeah. You're on your own.
Yeah, and then maybe I'll bring you back.
Don't worry about it, because we'll yeah. take you in.
Yeah, we have the IP.
You're beaten up.
And we have the IP. We have the compute.
And we have the IP. Well, Microsoft is a dynamite at getting IP and then doing nothing with it. They had they stole all the IP of the.
Let's just say IP is intellectual property for people who don't know.
They took all the IP. If you remember that era, it was another little fad that took place. Just started, kind of came and went just before we began our show 16 years ago, with these machine translation systems, and there was a bunch of them, and some of them were pretty good. And her near something learn out and Houseby, and there's a whole bunch of them.
You mean
somehow Microsoft and there were and they worked. Well,
you mean where you talk and then it would translate your speech,
yeah.
speech to text?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it worked pretty well. And in fact, it worked better than it should have, especially Houseby and Learner to whatever that one system was. And Microsoft's always invested a little bit here and there. And they ended up as part of the investment when the companies all went under. They all went under. Microsoft ended up with all the IP. It was part of the deal. It's like, well, if you go broke, we're going to give you money. But if you go broke, it says right here in the contract, we now have the IP. This is like a...
That's Microsoft. That's how Microsoft rolls.
Microsoft's... But the thing is, they ended up collecting all this IP. And I remember writing about this. Microsoft, I was told by one of the ex-guys from one of these companies, says, oh, Microsoft's going to kick ass in this field because they own all the IP of all the companies that did any of this work. Mm. And they're going to be the company that does all. No, never have. They just, the IP still there. They sit on it and they don't do crap with it. It's like they're, I don't know what it is about them, but they suck up IP and then they let it languish. It's weird.
Well, I mean, they do whatever they want. So
yeah, anyway, well, I know where they're
I don't know how you feel about it, but I think this thing is falling apart. Now
I don't think it's falling apart yet.
Well,
you're always a little ahead of this with your predictions. I think it's got a year to go or maybe more.
Okay, but not much.
But I'm going to give you some kudos. I'm not going to give you any kudos for the following clip, but I think it'd be a nice break in clippage to play this.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily kudos, but it's like an eye roller as far as I'm concerned.
Can you just say, Adam, you're great? You don't have to play a clip. You can just say, good job, Adam, whatever it is.
Well, I'm not going to say it yet. So I'm watching the Valuetainment guys, PBD.
Oh, yes, the Valuetainment guys.
And for some unknown reason, I don't know why, the beginning never explained it, but Roger Stone was sitting there.
Oh, I can already feel where this is going.
And so they're talking about everything. They're talking about the Sam Bankman, Sam Altman. Get those two confused. Sam Altman and how he got, the analysis was here now, and there.
Before you intro this clip, just to accentuate, we're talking about Sam Altman. He ran Y Combinator, and that was one of the 2000s. One of the big things was an incubator. It's a technology incubator, and it works.
It
like
was
this.
A good one too.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I think didn't Zoom come out of that and Slack and all
a
kinds
lot of stuff came out of it. And he made a lot of money.
Yeah. And so, but what you do is you say, okay, you two couple of guys, you're good. Come in here. Give us 50% of your company, and we'll give you a desk. Enjoy. And then when something pops out, then you hook those guys up with your Red Point VC guys, and you're an angel investor, and you make out like a bandit. And if you're lucky, like one or two of these will sell, and you make a lot of money. And all the rest, those kids are just they're the ones that got wiped off of the sidewalks of San Francisco when G came to town. But it doesn't mean that he's some AI genie. Anyway,
so this was about politics, and they go on and on about what's going to happen and how, and they were talking about Trump's numbers going up, like the clip we just played, and it goes on and on. And so they ask him for a rundown of what's going on with what are they going to do about Biden and the rest of it. And I thought this was quite interesting, and I think you'd enjoy it.
Roger, who's going to make that decision to say, President Biden, thank you for your service. Please step aside. How does the inner workings, the inner plumbing of the DNC actually work? Who's making that decision?
The most influential Democrat in the country today is Barack Obama. There is no question about that. And these affiliated news outlets respond very much to him. And the way their convention is set up is very different than the Republican convention. So you can dump a nominee because of the superdelegates far more easily. So the fact that the filing deadlines have already passed in the Democratic primary and caucus schedule for New Hampshire and Iowa have been neutered. They've taken away their delegates to make South Carolina the first contest, a state with an absolute majority of African American voters in their primary. The convention is where? Chicago. The Obama's hometown. I have predicted for some time that Michelle Obama is the most likely Democratic nominee. For the simple
more
reason.
More than Newsom?
Here's why, quite simply. You have a woman of color who's the vice president. She's next in line. How do you rationalize passing her by? If Joe doesn't run, how can you get away with passing her by?
She's got to pull the race card. You have to do it. Identity politics.
So you replace a woman of color with a far more popular.
So you're going to have two women running the country?
Not necessarily.
Sorry.
But I don't think that they can. I mean, you can't just bypass Kamala Harris, despite the fact that she doesn't have dementia, but she makes less sense than
Yeah, well, he's been on this tip for a while, so
yeah, I just thought I'd give you a little
a little
boost.
Big Mike 2024, everybody.
Big Mike. The American public would really recoil against this.
You really think so?
Oh yeah.
Well maybe. I don't know. You know what, it would be good for the show.
It would be good for the show.
Great for the show, that's for sure.
I have nothing but rando clips.
Well, can we do a little pharma then before we get into some randos? Or do you want to do randos first?
I'd like to start the pharma off with the Moderna CEO at a WEF meeting.
This has got to be old. This has got to be old. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a question and answer. The date is unknown, but it's not more than a year old. Mm. But it's where he... The clip is called CEO of Moderna Predicting the Pandemic.
I'm going to go with Stefan Bensel. Let's talk about vaccine development, because we've heard how it happened, obviously, with COVID-19 starting from 2022 and how extraordinary the process was also in terms of the speed. How is development, adoption and scaling of vaccine going on when it comes to different variants and subvariants? Because this is one of the big concerns as we're all here now and we're discussing, we understand the context, and this is a great deal.
Sure. Good morning and thank you for having me on the panel. So the great news versus 2020, where we are today, is we have manufacturing capacity. As Seth knows, when the pandemic happened, Moderna had made 100,000 doses in 2019 for the whole year. And I remember walking after Davos into the office of my head of manufacturing, and I say, how we make 1 billion doses next year? And you look at me a bit funny, say, what? I say, yeah, we need to make 1 billion doses next year. There's going to be a pandemic.
Okay, yeah. So this was taken. Yeah. This was cut off. I didn't get the whole clip. I couldn't find it, but
I probably have
it's
it
funny.
Somewhere. Yeah. I think I have it somewhere.
The whole one where he goes on? Because I like to know what he says afterwards.
Moderna.
By the way, while you're looking for that, I do have the new pandemic or one, a possible one.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have I couldn't get an American clip. You have an American clip?
I have the NTD clip.
Oh, we'll do the NTD clip, and then we'll do the WION clip. They are the only ones that seem to be on this. Let's see. What do you have it called here?
New.
Oh, yes. New.
A wave of mystery pneumonia is breaking out in China, affecting mostly children and overwhelming Chinese hospitals.
Bomb them.
Doctors there tell us the disease can be traced back to some combined pathogens like COVID-19, the flu, and mycoplasma pneumonia. Parents say the symptoms are usually severe.
This time, the child had a high fever repeatedly, which never went down. This is too scary.
A former Chinese reporter posted a conversation in a group chat indicating that a child died on the new pneumonia. The wave hit the area around Beijing, but also Dalian, a city almost 500 miles from Beijing. Hospitals are overwhelmed with sick children. Mm-hmm. Hospital staff from Tianjin City told us some children have to wait days to be treated. Parents start scrambling several days in advance to get the numbers. We only have so many doctors, and we can only handle so many people every day. So we give out a certain amount of numbers every day. You can book in advance, but you have to be able to grab one first, because a huge number of children are getting sick. This wave started a month ago, and it's getting worse recently. Parents told us some schools suspended classes as both teachers and students are sick. They said the authorities are trying to block information from circulating online.
Oh, this is very good. Oh, excellent. Well, WION was a little more explicit about it, trying to relate it to the OG pandemic.
An undetermined pneumonia outbreak in China is hitting children hard.
Children's hospitals are overwhelmed in multiple locations.
Reports of a spike in pneumonia cases in China are similar to early reports of a mystery pneumonia outbreak in 2019 in Wuhan,
which heralded the emergence of COVID-19.
Now, the reports reference swamped pediatric hospitals in multiple locations, including Beijing and Liaoning, which is around 800 kilometers away.
Reports also say the pneumonia outbreaks have led to school cancellations and some illnesses in teachers.
So a couple of things here.
Wait, why are they ping-ponging the report?
That's how they roll. That's how they do it. I don't know.
It sounds stupid. One says one sentence, the other one says another sentence, and it goes back and forth and forth. Well,
this is why we're doing a podcast. We're not running WION. So what we need to see now, people be aware, we need to see children dying on TikTok. That would be one. I mean, originally we saw people falling down on TikTok in the middle of the street. You remember those videos?
Boy, so, those are the good old days.
So we need something like that. Then we need
It's being sprayed with some powder. Remember that one?
Yes. And then we need a landing zone in the West where, you know, well, some babies got on a flight and they flew over there and infected the other babies.
Yeah. So Seattle.
Seattle would be good. And then we'll take it from there. You know, we already have all the drills. We know how to do it. We know how to talk to people. We know how to communicate with Johns Hopkins. When they start getting on this train, then we should be worried. And at the same time, Mandy Cohen.
You heard it here first, by the way.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We're all over this. We're ready for it. Dr. Mandy Cohen, who is the new director of the CDC, and she is she's also a marketing person. She's like the Sam Altman of Big Pharma. And she's going out there and she's getting everybody ready and getting everybody worried and everyone confused. And they'll be a little anxious because, you know, you don't want to kill grandma. Remember, it's Thanksgiving, everybody. Let's have a happy, cheery report.
As millions get ready to gather for the holiday, health officials are urging people to take some extra precautions. That's because the CDC estimates there have already been up to 1.6 million flu cases. Ooh. RSV infections are also on the rise, especially impacting kids under the age of four. And COVID-19 is still a concern for a lot of families, but only about 15% of adults have received that updated shot. So let's break it down and see what it all means, how we can protect ourselves and our loved ones.
Mandy.
The CDC's new director, Dr. Mandy Cohen. Dr. Cohen, so happy that you're here with us today.
You know, the news stations are so happy they don't have to deal with Fauci anymore. They got Dr. Mandy. She's up. She's exciting. She's young. You know, they're happy to have her on the show.
As we said, tons of people are on the road. People are going to be gathering. Not many people have gotten the flu shot or the COVID shot. How concerned are you about these
leading the witness.
Gatherings?
Well, look, we love to gather during the holidays. And it's wonderful to be here with both of you. So fun.
So fun. It's wonderful to be here with both of you. So fun.
But as we get
into the holidays. Specifically, what makes it fun? You've done hits.
She's there with him. She's in studio.
She's in studio.
It's so fun. So fun getting up at the crack of dawn getting in your limo, then getting into makeup, and then waiting around and drinking crappy coffee. It's so fun.
Holiday gatherings. Well, look, we love to gather during the holidays. And first, it's wonderful to be here with both of you. So fun. But as we get into the holidays, we need to protect each other. And yes, too few people have gotten the vaccine. So
hold on a second. We need to protect each other. Is she repeating the completely debunked lie that being vaccinated somehow stops the spread? We have to protect each other. So I have to get vaccinated for you. I thought we were past this.
You have to get vaccinated for me, and you have to be masked up, double masked,
for
N95s,
yeah,
two of them, okay, and 6 feet away.
So, okay. So we're just back to that old script, and it's just so fun to be here, and we're not questioning that. NBC Today Show.
To be here with both of you. So fun. But as we get into the holidays, we need to protect each other. And yes, too few people have gotten the vaccine so far. And I know folks are over COVID and they want to leave it in the rearview mirror, but it's here with us. So the three reasons to get vaccinated. One, the virus has changed. So you want the most updated protection you can get. Second, if you had COVID before or you've been vaccinated, that protection has decreased over time. So you want the boosted up protection. And third, people are still getting long COVID, right? The long symptoms from that virus, even if you get a mild case. So all three reasons. We don't want to be sick, but we certainly don't want to be sick for a long time. So getting vaccinated is still really the most important way you can protect yourself and your family.
Oh, well, thanks, Dr. Mandy. Oh, but wait, there's more. Wasn't there a shortage of all these wonderful, this trivalent?
It was hard to get the COVID vaccine in the early going, this more updated one. Do you feel like all those wrinkles have been kind of ironed out and it's pretty accessible now?
Yeah, so moving out of the emergency, the federal government wasn't purchasing and distributing. The private sector was doing it. They did have some hiccups right at the beginning, but that's all really been ironed out. Plenty of supply of vaccine for COVID and flu. Get your appointment now. It's never too late to get vaccinated. I know folks are saying, it's already in the middle season. No, it's actually just starting right now. So plenty of time to get vaccinated.
Plenty of time to get vaccinated.
Wait, if it's starting right now, there's not plenty of time. How does that make any sense?
Because she's doing a sales job here. She's got her brown shoes on and she's selling. By the way, karma for Sir Mark Hall. He finally got COVID. He had not gotten COVID. He got COVID. He texts me. He said, "Happy Thanksgiving. I have COVID." You know what the doctor pushed on him right away? Remdesivir. I said, I'm not a doctor, but no, not at all. Let's go back to Dr. Mandy.
The number of people who have the flu seems pretty high.
Flu.
Do you think this is all because we had been isolated for so much? Because now
No, it's because your immune system is shot.
I feel like people have had these long coughs for months that's been going on and on.
Oh, that's you. Yeah, you had a cough going on for quite a long time. Yeah,
I had a cough that went on for a month.
Yeah, you should mask up. I don't want it coming through the wire.
There are lot of bugs that are circulating.
It's never too late to get vaccinated.
Viruses and bacteria, but we have ways to protect ourselves. Vaccine is one, but also if you get sick over this holiday season, make sure you're getting tested because testing allows you to know what you have.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't even work.
So
you can get treatment. Boxes of tests.
We have treatment for flu and for COVID, and that treatment could save your life. You
treatment.
Can get
What's
four
the
free
treat? If there's treatments, what do you need the vaccine for?
Yeah, I don't
She's
know.
Screwing up.
Yeah, this
treatment
is no good.
For flu and for COVID, and that treatment could save your life. You can get four free tests, COVID tests at covidtests.gov right now. We actually just yesterday said you can get four free new ones. Mm-hmm. So get your test, take them with you if you travel, so you know if you're getting sick.
So you know if you're getting sick. This is all so dystopian.
It's such bullcrap.
Yeah, last
you clip. Know you're getting sick. Just keep taking the test over and over.
That's exactly right.
Dr. Cohen, you're the new sheriff in town, the new head of the CDC, and I don't have to tell you.
The new sheriff in town. She's the new sheriff in town. Huh. She's not a doctor, Jim.
She's just a bureaucrat.
She's a sheriff.
Dr.
When
Cohen,
did the CDC become the spokesperson for all this stuff? I remember 10 years ago, they never showed it. It's only recent.
Yeah.
We never heard from the CDC.
We know
unless it was something, some crazy outbreak of salmonella.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the new sheriff in town.
Dr. Cohen, you're the new sheriff in town, the new head of the CDC, and I don't have to tell you there.
Is she? Oh, she's laughing in the background.
Yes, I am.
Dr. Cohen, you're the new sheriff in town, the new head of the CDC, and I don't have to tell you there have been some questions about trust in the agency in the wake of the pandemic.
Well, just a few.
Surveys will show you that the CDC is held in not low regard, but the trust is not there as it used to be. What are you doing to turn it around?
Yeah, so I'm about 6 months into the job. We're focused on transparency, where I think that's important to build trust, communicating faster, more simply, making sure we're focused on giving folks simple ways to protect themselves, certainly building relationships. And I personally have been traveling all around the country so that folks can hear from me directly. So I'm not just a CDC director, I'm a mom. Mm-hmm.
I'm not just the president of the Hair Club for Men, I'm a client.
So that folks can hear from me directly. So I'm not just a CDC director, I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. I have two daughters who are 9 and 11, and I want them to know what I did for my own daughters. And I got both of them the updated COVID vaccine and the flu shot because I wanted them to be protected.
Why didn't you give them the RSV shot?
Same with myself. Yeah. I got myself vaccinated. My parents, I wouldn't recommend something for the American people I wouldn't do for my own family. And I want them to hear from me directly. So I've been all over the country sharing that message.
Well, Dr. Cohen, we wish you the best of luck. Thank you for coming to see us.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Right. Well, so, honestly, that's all. Unless this new Chinese thing gets some legs, which I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's going to work or not.
Yeah, I think it would have been picked up by someone by now. It's been a month in the making.
Yeah, well, it took a while for COVID to really. First, it was a slow burn. We had the TikTok video. We need the TikTok videos. We need dead babies on TikTok.
COVID, I think, began in earnest when the cases appeared in Seattle.
No, when it was in Italy, that's when it started.
No, it was the Seattle cases. That's when we got involved.
True.
We here got all jacked up, and it was. I still have the clips. Where they go, we'll have to wait and see, but it's bad for these old people.
Let's just finish this out with some ABC. ABC, let's see, they got a little buy on ABC. Not a big buy, but they did, and someone was emailed us asking about this. Because he didn't really understand about the native ad, and we had to explain that. When the pharmaceutical companies or any company, McDonald's is even a better example. McDonald's has, they're bringing back the McNugget or the McRib sandwich. And then so they say, okay, we're going to buy $5 million worth of advertising. We're going to have spots running on ABC. But then, to kick it off, we want to have the morning crew, eating our McRib sandwich.
Yeah. And by the way, it should be noted that we always time these out. And they always run almost exactly 2 minutes. Buy. And you see the spot. And if it goes any longer, people are giving each other the evil eye.
So let's see. Let's talk. Well, let's see if ABC, Good Morning America, if they have anything.
And with that, Ginger, flu and respiratory illness season getting underway. The CDC issuing its first report of the season on where activity is already high. Stephanie Ramos is here with more. Good morning, Stephanie.
Robin, good morning. We are in the thick of the flu season. New data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention indicates that several states are grappling with elevated flu activity.
Elevated.
The CDC's latest report reveals concerning spikes in influenza cases across 7 states, including Louisiana, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi,
Republicans,
New Mexico, and South Carolina.
Idiots.
Additionally, D.C. and Puerto Rico are experiencing elevated flu levels. Some good news, though, despite good increased news. Flu and COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations have been lower compared to last year. However, health officials caution against complacency. The CDC estimates there have been more than 780,000 flu illnesses and nearly 500 deaths from October of last year up until last week. While flu hospitalizations have remained lower than this time last year, emergency rooms brace for what could be a challenging season with simultaneous surges in RSV, flu, and COVID. Now, as the holiday season approaches, Thanksgiving is just this week, health officials warn about the potential for super spreader events and urge caution during gatherings. Lindsay.
Encouraging people to mask up. Once again, Stephanie, our thanks to you.
Mask up.
No one said that. The CDC didn't say it. She just said encouraging people to mask up. So I don't know what that was about, but Paxlovid got some advertising in here.
All right, Dr. Darian, you are taking a look at COVID cases. They are ticking up around the country.
Ticking up? It's an uptick?
Many people are revisiting questions around Paxlovid. Yeah. Tell us about that. Who's benefiting from it?
So I think it's really important to talk about this when I'm diagnosing patients and they have a higher risk. I usually talk to them about Paxlovid and its helpful effectiveness in preventing COVID-19 complications. So here are some four things I think you should know.
So he's not the vaccine guy. He's the Paxlovid guy. Not Paxlovid, the Paxlovid guy.
So here are some four things I think you should know. Number one, who are they for? Paxlovid is indicated for anyone over the age of 50 and or those who have lung and heart disease or a compromised immune system. We've known previously in clinical trials that Paxlovid has reduced the risk of hospitalization by as much as 90%.
Whoa.
Now, you might see newer studies that show a decreased effectiveness. That doesn't mean that the medication is decreasing the effectiveness.
I love this.
What does it mean?
We're comparing it to, though, the comparable group, those who have been vaccinated, those who have had COVID-19 infections. That's why we see that number change.
Did you understand what he just said?
Yeah, he didn't say anything.
No, so you may read stuff about, okay, go out there and debunk
whatever
this.
You read is wrong. Listen to me.
Studies that show a decreased effectiveness, that doesn't mean that the medication is decreasing the effectiveness. Who we're comparing it to, though, the comparable group, those who have been vaccinated, those who have had COVID-19 infections. That's why we see that number change. Thirdly, what it looks like. It is a combination of two medications, three pills you take twice a day. And then lastly, the possible side effects that we should all pay attention to. It can include an altered sense of taste, nausea, diarrhea, and sometimes muscle aches.
That's the same thing as COVID. You're taking COVID.
Exactly the same. It's basically COVID in a pill.
And of course, we always talk about the risk of Paxlovid rebound, which is a small but important to note population where it occurs. Wow.
Absolutely. Well, that antiviral medication is certainly helping many.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Many. Absolutely. Absolutely. Good job. Here's your check. Get out of here, Doc. But that, of course, is
the check goes the other way.
Yeah, well, this is not.
He also gets paid.
No, he gets a check.
True.
This, of course, is not the big pharma ad for this season. No. This season is all about Thanksgiving. Do you say Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving? I hear people say Thanksgiving instead of Thanksgiving.
I say Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but is it Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Or Thanksgiving?
It's Thanksgiving.
Okay. Well. Anyway, back to the season. Of course, we have something fantastic on the market right now. We're so happy to have this because people usually struggle around this season when there's a lot of food around. And luckily, we've got some weight loss drugs for you. Which one shall we sell on NBC?
As we gather tonight with friends and family getting ready for the Thanksgiving holiday, some are changing the way many people think about their Thanksgiving feast. The growing popularity of weight loss drugs. Stephanie Gosk on a holiday meal game changer.
It's a game changer.
Step aside stuffing and pumpkin pie. For many Americans, the focus this Thanksgiving may be less on the food. The use of revolutionary weight loss and diabetes medications is skyrocketing.
For some people, that this holiday is about piling up a lot of food on your plate. Is that something that you would do anymore?
No, absolutely not.
Jackie Barrow lost 75 pounds in the last year taking the diabetes drug Mounjaro.
You're just not eating the same amounts that you used to.
Yes, it all looks so good, but you just don't have anywhere to put it.
In the end of the day, how can you resist that pumpkin pie, Jackie? You can't resist it.
I don't, but I don't think just a little bit.
The conservative estimate is that at least 3 million people are taking diabetes drugs Ozempic and Mounjaro or the obesity drug Wegovy.
You think people are going to buy less turkeys?
I doubt that's going to happen this Thanksgiving.
But while the bottom line for food companies hasn't changed, the industry is definitely paying attention. In October, Walmart's CEO told Bloomberg that shoppers who were picking up prescriptions to weight loss medications were buying less food.
How do you think food companies will start adapting?
The easy options are things like portion control. If people are saying I get full faster, then maybe I want to pivot to something that's smaller portion sizes.
Which is what grandmother Jackie Barrow says she will prefer tomorrow while she enjoys some of her newfound energy.
I'll be running around with the kids. I am thankful I am going to be able to do this and enjoy it more this time.
With a little less food, and lots more family.
Oh, it's wonderful. Oh,
this is a new little thing in there. Did you catch it? It increases your energy.
Yeah.
Yes. So you can run around with the kids. Granny.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I did get boots on the ground.
Very well done.
Boots on the ground from a family physician in the Netherlands. Mm. I just got out of a Pfizer lunch.
Lunch. It's flying the wall time.
Yes, about the winter respiratory infections. It seems like they are lining up medical professionals for more awareness on respiratory syndrome, i.e. trying to scare them. But I have to disagree with JCD. RSV has been a very common respiratory infection in children up to 1 year, has no specific treatment, but is a common reason for hospitalization for support or oxygen when they present with an asthma attack. However,
my thing, you can't disagree with me because I never said anything except the following. I've never heard of this disease until 3 years ago.
Yes, that's correct. You have not ever heard of it. That's correct. Lots of other people.
What's to disagree? I am not lying.
No, you're not lying. In fact, it is a classic JCD move. There's no evidence.
There's no evidence that I've ever heard of this.
There's no evidence you ever heard of this up until 3 years ago. Correct. Both Pfizer and GlaxoSmithKline have an RSV vaccine in the pipelines. About 70 pregnant mothers need to take the vaccine to prevent one hospitalization of their children. This is the data he got from the lunch. The GSK trial has problems with higher rates of preterm birth and even death. Sounds like a winner. Wait.
Who is giving on the seminar again? What's the name of the company?
Pfizer. Pfizer, of course.
So why are they going to start plugging the other guy's products? I don't think so.
No, he's not plugging the guy.
The Pfizer, they're going to present something. They're not going to present good news about GSK.
Exactly.
GlaxoSmithKline.
No, they said that their vaccine is killing people.
It's killing people. It's
probably a minor problem in adults compared to flu, COVID, and pneumococcal pneumonia. RSV was found in 5.7% of about 20,000 elderly in a Dutch study, median age 75. None were ever hospitalized. There you go. So this giving it to old people is the new thing, which is, of course, is to rip off Medicare and government.
Totally.
Government money. That's what it's about.
Government money.
Just tell that's everybody old people. Yeah.
When I'm old enough, I've been collecting Medicare for years. Mm-hmm. And you see it when you go, it's just for a checkup or anything. They are trying to come up with anything they can do to charge more to the government. And I see, right, I'm looking at what, I don't want this test. I don't want that shot. I don't want this. I don't want that. And they always back off. Oh, yeah, well, you don't really need it. But they really want you to sign up for everything so they can gouge the government.
Yeah.
This is really the problem with Medicare.
Of course it is. It's horrible.
Why is it going broke? Because they're gouging the government.
Yeah. I have two more clips before I can take a break, and then we can certainly do some randos. We had a dinner the other night. I'm looking at this copper price. Did you see that this copper company collapsed? This Chinese copper company, Mica Metals?
Yeah.
I mean, the copper is, there's no way that there's something is wrong. We have all these manufacturers saying we're going to make electric vehicles, but there's no demand for copper and the copper mines are closing. I don't understand it. It makes no sense. And then we had a dinner, and there's a guy who works at Mercedes-Benz. And he says, it's horrible. He says, it's horrible what's happening. He's like a internal combustion engine guy. He says, this is no good. He says, the EQ, I don't know what, the sub-EV Mercedes sells. And the battery, just the battery, guess how much it costs? Just
$40,000.
$46,000. He says, you have an accident, immediately that thing has to be replaced. He says, The insurance companies are not going to insure these cars. No,
they're total everything out.
They're not going to insure these cars.
The insurance for those cars is going to go way up.
And so I said, so what is Formula One, McLaren? Are they going to do all battery cars? He says, no, it's worse. He says the AMG. Now, AMG is the like the high-end Mercedes.
It's the aftermarket company for jacking up Mercedes cars.
Right, but they sell them as new. I mean,
they're new cars.
Yeah,
and they put they're jacked up. They got better horsepower. They look better. Everything about them is cool.
Right. So they're now. So I said, what's going to happen with the AMGs? He said, they're going to put batteries in them and then like a four-cylinder engine. So they're still going to sell this AMG as a high horsepower car, but it's all coming from batteries. And the engine's just going to be a little four-cylinder piece of crap.
Yeah, like in case
1800 cc or something.
Yeah, some motorcycle engine.
I mean, are people going to buy this? I can't believe people are going to buy this.
Well, from AMG, they'll buy anything from AMG. I mean, the Prius, people don't realize, but a Prius, which is the real winner of a hybrid, it doesn't even have a normal combustion engine in the front to make it a hybrid. It's some three-cylinder weird engine it's not even a normal engine.
It's a Wankel engine.
And when it starts up, the whole car shakes like a son of a bitch.
It's a Wankel motor, I tell you. No, Toyota has announced a car that runs on ammonia.
Yeah.
This doesn't sound right.
I'm not going to get in an ammonia car. Forget it. Not me.
Flying bombs. I don't know what they're thinking. Stupid. Anyway, it will be necessary because, well, maybe not. We're basically dead. I mean, we've missed it. We've blown it. We're supposed to keep the temperature down 1.5 degrees. It's 41 here in the Hill Country. But okay, that's not the lead story, CNN.
In our Earth Matters series, a moment scientists have been warning about for decades. For the first time, the global average temperature on Friday was more than 2 degrees Celsius hotter than levels before industrialization. Now, that's a crucial threshold that could have irreversible impacts on the planet. Let's go to CNN's chief climate correspondent, Bill Weir. So, Bill, walk us through the significance of this and what the impacts could be.
Well, Bianca, of course, the Paris Accord was hoping to hold things at 1.5 degrees Celsius with a limit of 2. One-third of the days this year were above 1.5 degrees. That's how hot the last 12 months have been. And yes, humanity reached that red letter 2 degrees Celsius point. This is really the troubling point science has always pointed to as a point where we start to see these tipping points where methane is released in the Arctic, perhaps, or ice shelves on the Antarctic might break off and things could happen suddenly. That, of course, might happen after decades above.
Wow, that's totally climate of fear, where they blew up a part of the Arctic shelf and then a piece of ice broke off and that was the worst thing that could ever happen, which he doesn't exactly explain what happens. But when that ice shelf breaks, we're all dead.
In the Arctic, perhaps, or ice shelves on the Antarctic might break off and things could happen suddenly. That, of course, might happen after decades above 2 degrees, not just a short period. But if you look at that chart from Copernicus, this is the UN's or the Europe's Space and Climate Agency, you see the red line where we are off the charts compared to all the decades that come before. The spaghetti at the bottom are 10-year periods going back to the 40s. Off the charts, warmest in 125,000 years. And on top of this, we just got a new projection from the UN that just looked at the plans for fossil fuel extraction.
Boiling.
Already what's underway, what's in the pipeline, they say will warm us up to double right now.
1,000 degrees.
2.9 degrees as well. That despite all the pledges to decarbonize, that emissions hit a record in 2022, over 57 gigatons of carbon put up into the sea and sky. It needs to come down at a rate of 29% by the end of this decade, by 2030. Bianca, we're on track now to just, with all the pledges met, be less than 10% decrease.
Oh no. We're dead, man. I can't believe you're alive. Are you even with me? I mean, we should be dead by this. It's just horrible.
I don't know.
Now,
I like the weather.
It's warm over there. It's nice. We could use a little warmer. I could take 2 degrees Celsius. So now this is a gem. So sometime in 2024, if all goes according to the evil plans of the elites, we will have this this WHO, World Health Organization, treaty signed and ratified by all member states. And this includes the United States, as our country has a treaty. The treaty is already in place. This is an upgrade to the treaty, which I believe does not even have to be ratified by our Congress.
I think it gets grandfathered in.
Something like that. And this is being warned about in European Parliament. I haven't really seen it in Congress, but there's a lot of people saying, hey, they're going to have a lot of power.
Too much power.
Now, no one's really taken this seriously because you get that. What's the douchebag's name from Nigeria? Desman. What's his name?
I don't know.
The head of the WHO. The guy we kept.
Yeah, that guy.
That's his name.
Charlie. I always just call him that guy. I can't understand him half the time.
That guy. Wow, I'm annoyed. No, not Desmond Tutu. Troll room trying to be helpful. No, Tedros. There we go.
Tedros.
So he's hard to take serious. But there is a person at the WHO who kind of scares me. Who is our envoy? Who is the United States' douche du chef when it comes to climate change?
I don't know. Who?
John Kerry.
Oh, that guy.
Right. Well, guess where his daughter is.
Our guest today is Vanessa Kerry. In June, she became the first ever climate change and health special envoy for the World Health.
Is she like a climatologist or is she a famous scientist and has done a lot of research? There's a lot of papers and she knows all about climate. Is that why she got this position?
Well, I don't know. But the unfortunate thing is that she has her dad's face. So,
oh, my God.
Our guest today is Vanessa Kerry. In June, she became the first ever climate change and health special envoy for the World Health Organization. As such, she will be front and center at the upcoming COP28 in Dubai. So will be her father, John Kerry, who is the special climate envoy of the Biden administration.
She is, in fact, a doctor. She has a picture on her Wikipedia. She's wearing a lab coat with a stethoscope around her neck.
She actually, there's one picture of her here. Straight up, straight on, she looks, kind of okay, but there's any semi-profile, she looks like a transgender male.
Dr. Vanessa Kerry joins us from Boston. Thank you very much. So obviously, when people think about climate change, they don't necessarily think about health. You were the first to be appointed in that position. What does it tell us about the importance of health in the climate change issue?
Well, I think we have learned with great, great understanding in the most recent years that the climate crisis is a health crisis. And already...
Climate, you're through it, but you're missing what she's saying. Say climate crisis is a health crisis.
It's a health crisis.
In the most recent years that the climate crisis is a health crisis. Mm-hmm. And already we see 7 million people a year dying from air pollution, for example. That's more than we saw in the entire COVID pandemic over 3 years. And that's one person every 5 seconds. So that by the time I complete my next sentence, someone else will have died.
Well, stop talking.
No, no.
Stop talking. You're killing people.
And we see this in every aspect of health, the way climate change is impacting our lived experience. And so there's a very real...
Oh, our lived experience. Oh, goodness. She's a cliche.
In every aspect of health, the way climate change is impacting our lived experience. And so there's a very real opportunity for us to have a health-centered approach to climate change and to be able to ensure that we're protecting how we live, how we breathe, how we walk, and what we can do in our lives. And so the appointment, I think, is truly just an opportunity to continue to really flag the urgency of what we face.
Save the climate. Wear a mask. This is how you get climate lockdowns. It's bad for your health right now because you're driving a internal combustion engine. You need to stay home. These people, and this is, what kind of nepotism is this? have John Kerry's daughter at the WHO. Now she's a special envoy. Oh, yes, I'll be communicating with Tedros. Yeah, you know, Teddy and I, we had a meeting. We think you should lock yourself
down. She's the co-founder or the founder of the nonprofit Seed Global Health.
Ooh, sounds good.
Seems to be her, and she still does that, seems to be her main thing. Formerly known as the Global Health Services Corps, founded in 2011. Goodness. Peace Corps for doctors and nurses.
I have one last boots on the ground I just wanted to read. And we have noticed, certainly with the multiple wars that we are funding, that the reports often have a lot of gunfire and missile launches and rockets and bombs.
And I have a new one for today's show.
Well, if you play it, then I will hold my boots on the ground until after we've played that, because
it's actually on the ISO list.
Okay.
And it's the ISO rat-a-tat. It's just nice.
Long-time listeners started listening during COVID. Well, not that long. Boots on the ground report when it comes to the explosions you guys always make fun of when listening to a news package. They're called Nat Pops, i.e. natural sounds, N-A-T-P-O-P-S. Nat Pops are natural sounds, i.e. guns firing, explosions, jets zooming by, that are indeed used to break up reporter track in a news package. It's a strategy we use to bring the viewer into the story. In real life, our world is full of Nat Pops. It's supposed to draw the viewer in. At least that's the theory. It's a lot less boring than just hearing a reporter track a voice all throughout the package. Anybody who works editing video and news knows this strategy, and the bosses are always making sure we use these Nat Pops in our storytelling. Video editors who don't use this strategy are usually the suckier ones. Also, in my humble opinion, and everybody else who edits video, Nat Pops are separate bad or okay stories from great stories. For anyone wondering, I'm a photojournalist for a news company in Phoenix, shoot, edit, and even write stories. I work in tandem with reporters and news producers daily. Yeah. There you go.
He's in the business.
He's in the biz. We never had a name for it. Nat Pops.
No, we never did. We never worked in that field, but of reporting war stories, Nat Pops.
Nat Pops, yep, Nat Pops.
I like it.
Good to
know. Okay, now we know.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courtesy in the morning to you, the man who put the C in the chain of argument. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John Slade DeMora!
Well, in the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Also in the morning, all ships at sea. Boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
And in the morning to the trolls. Now, we don't expect a lot of trolls, but let's see. There's a shortage of trolls. 13, 16. Oh, that's probably the worst we've ever had.
13, 16 is the lowest for a Thursday, but this is a Thursday. I don't remember us doing this count last Thanksgiving.
No, probably did not. And we'd like to remind everybody we're working on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, so we probably lost. Well, I figured we lost. I've always thought we'd lose 20% of the audience on these holidays that we work.
Oh, sure. Well, there you go. More than 20%, probably.
Oh.
And now, back in the day, I remember many, many a Thanksgiving when you would need to pause the show to baste your turkey.
Yeah, but we're having the turkey tomorrow.
Oh, of course. Jay's of course. Cooking it. The Dvoraks, yes. We have Christmas in January and Thanksgiving on Friday. Okay. Why?
And Jay's cooking the turkey.
Well, because Mimi is coming. Is Mimi coming down?
No.
She's not coming?
Not this time. Because she's busy with setting up the kennel.
Oh, this, by the way, is Mimi of TooManyEggs.com.
Yeah, TooManyEggs.com. Get some Christmas gifts while you're at it.
She's doing the kennel. Hey, you know, you got to be careful with the kennel. You know about
it's going to be very busy tomorrow because of the holiday.
I wouldn't be so sure.
We know all about it. We know all about the disease, and there's certain things we will do at this kennel that no other kennels will do, like dogs can't share a ball.
Well, so I just wanted, so you obviously know, but we didn't play any clips that there's a mysterious dog illness on the loose.
Yeah, the dog virus, a new dog virus.
I'm waiting for an mRNA shot for your dog. That's what I'm waiting for.
It's obviously that's what's coming.
It must be. So is there no ball sharing?
No water bowl sharing.
No cough at each other. Do you make the dogs wear a mask? They have to wear a mask.
The dogs all wear masks. They all get masked up when they come in.
If you want to be a troll, you can, of course, join us. You can join us early on show days. Darren O'Neill does the Rock and Roll pre-show. You can go to...
And by the way, Jack White stinks. And, you know, that last song he played was Jack White. It was just a cacophony of... It was a mess. It was not musical by any means.
Jack White is a weird dude, too, man. He's weird. He's a weird guy. He's just weird. You ever met him?
No. Weird. I would have no opportunity to meet him that I can think of.
Weird dude. Successful, though. He's turned. Well, that's not necessarily a given, but he's parlayed that pretty well. Has his own place where he gigs and, yeah, gotten pretty good.
When did you meet him?
Oh, my God. So long ago. I don't remember. I've met everybody. You name it. Tchaikovsky, met him.
George W. Bush.
No, but I did.
Donald Trump.
Hey, I should have met him by now.
Yeah, you should have. And I feel that, you know, support for him is out the window.
Lost my vote. He can go sit there with Bobby the Op. I'm Big Mike 2024, baby. That's where I'm going. So, you can become a troll by going to trollroom.io. I did meet Stephen Hawking. Yes, I did. Stephen Hawking. I met him. Remember that?
No, I don't remember.
Yes,
that.
I was in a restaurant in Los Angeles, and he was at the table next to me, and he had all these hot nurses.
Yeah, he always had babes around him.
Yes, he got babe-a-rama.
Hey, baby, come over here.
You can become a troll by going to trollroom.io, where you can log in. You can start posting right away. And also, of course, we have the stream there, noagendastream.com. It's 24/7. There's always a cool podcast rolling. A lot of them are live these days. And if not, then it's still fun to troll along with your fellow trolls. You can get a modern podcast app. Go to podcastapps.com. A number of them have the live feature, and CurioCaster actually is it. You don't even need an app for that. It's a website, and you can, it has the chat room right in there, and then troll along and do everything. These are great apps, and you'll want that because when this show updates, those apps know within 90 seconds. No more waiting around for Apple, you know, to finally figure out, there's a new podcast. No, you know it right away. The magic of Podping. The value for value proposition is what we started just about 16 years ago, and it has kept us on the air and kept us being able to continue to deconstruct media for you twice a week. Didn't at some point we do three shows a week for maybe a couple weeks?
Never.
I thought, well, we came close.
We kept threatening it.
We came close.
It was like a running gag.
Yeah, and then
we never did it.
I thought we tried it once and was like, nope. Oh no, that doesn't work.
No, we did something else. It was like we did I think one of our 200, one of our bonus shows or something that was going to be used for something else, and we did it in the same during the week when we did the other shows, and we realized it's too much work to do three shows a week.
And it is actual work. I mean, people are like, you just yap in the microphone,
sit and shoot the shit, shoot the shit with deal. Each other.
It's like it's not just a job; it's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. I mean, literally, here we are on Thanksgiving. The minute we're done, I have to jump in the shower, get ready, and I have 30 minutes to get to the Thanksgiving dinner that we've been invited to.
Where are you going?
The international arms dealer.
Well, I always think you're going to say International House of Pancakes. You have a great Thanksgiving dinner there.
No, the International Arms Dealer is great. His wife is Moms for Liberty leader. So it'll be lively. I might have stuff to talk about.
So will the food be good?
Oh, she is she is top notch. She's a great cook.
Why don't you eat there all the time?
Well, we do. We eat there a lot. Wait, my wife is a good cook. I'm a good cook. But but Andrea, her presentation is above anything we could achieve. She got great presentation. She has great sauce skills. Yeah, no, she's good. She's really good. And I'm bringing a Dutch dessert, which is called spekkoek. People should take note of this. Spekkoek, S-P-E-K-K-O-E-K, spekkoek, which was sent to me by a producer. And
so you didn't even make it?
No, I'm going to tell everybody I did, though. Please. So I made
this is the way you do it.
I made a. This is what I used to do with stuffing. I would make stovetop, and people would love it. Oh, this is great stuffing. Of course it is. I slaved over it. It's a family recipe. Just stovetop is the best. Stovetop.
So what is spekkoek?
Well, look it up. It's a multi-layered cake, and you usually cut it into small slices, no more than a centimeter thick. And it has just layers of like a soft cookie type substance, you know, like maple syrupy type taste in there. It's sweet. Look it up, spekkoek.
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay. And what do you think?
Thousand layer cake, it's called.
Okay. We call it spekkoek. Thousand layer
cake. Well, it says spekkoek, thousand layer cake. Well, lapis legit cakes.
That's ChatGPT who just made that up.
No, I'm not looking at ChatGPT.
It's a colonized cake. We're going to go.
There's a green version.
Yes. Yep. There's green versions. Yeah. This is the brown.
You made the green. Is this the green version?
I don't know. I haven't cut into it. Green could be on the inside. It could be have a green layer on the inside. It's very tasty. Very rich. It's very. People go, that's rich. Very
it's a layered spice cake.
Spice cake, yeah.
It's extremely harmonious blend of Eastern and Western flavors.
Yes, Indonesian. It's
all the good cooking in Holland is from Indonesia.
Yeah. Indonesian influences, correct? Yeah. Thank you for reminding me. I can say this is has Indonesian influences. I picked this up when I lived in Holland. I picked up the art of spekkoek. You know, some people call it thousand layer cake.
There's no way. I'm looking at this cake. I'm saying there's no way you're going to cook this. Nobody that I know would make this cake because of the layers.
That's me, baby.
Many layers.
I slaved over it. I want people to be grateful.
If anyone believes this story, they have to have something wrong with them.
Well, there you go. We are in the Hill Country. So we appreciate time, talent, treasure. That's what we love getting from people. And the way that works is, look, you got this show. You were hanging around. Hey, wow, these guys gave me some valuetainment. And they gave that to me for free. I could just listen to it whenever I wanted to. There's no subscription fee. There's no advertisements. There's no Patreon, no levels. Didn't have to, no paywall where you get the premium content or bonus content.
No premium content at all. It's all premium content.
All 100% premium content.
Why wouldn't all the content be premium? Yeah. Was the rest of it's crap?
Exactly. Well, of course, the stuff that you get for free is going to be crap. Our stuff is primo. It's A1 steak sauce right up front. And all we ask is, from time to time, you're like, that was valuable to me. Send us some value back. Time, talent, treasure. We have a lot of people who provide us with time. Mimi provides us with time and talent. She does the meetup list. We have Sir Daniel. He does meetup and noagendameetups.com.
The page.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a lot of work.
Yes. We have Void Zero managing stuff. We have tons of things. We have people doing so much work, posting memes on No Agenda Social. Thank you for that value. That's really highly appreciated. And of course,
I like it.
I'm sure you do.
You don't.
Nope. No, I've given up. No, I'm done. I'm not even liking or boosting anybody anymore. I'm not even looking.
Never had in the past.
I boosted a lot. Not anymore. I'm done. I know because the minute I say something, the minute I troll, hey man, that's not cool, man. He was a knight.
Just block him.
Oh, and so I blocked this one guy, and here's what he did. So he took the picture of me holding up the PhD, and then he put an Israeli flag on it, and it says, No Agenda's new sponsor. And I'm like, so I blocked him, like you always tell me to do.
Yes, and you should.
And then he's like, reaching out to me through back channels, you know, other places.
Then screw him if he's going to be that kind of a douchebag.
He says, "Hey, man, you couldn't take the ribbing."
The ribbing. That's not ribbing. That's insulting.
Yes. Oh, there's been other insulting. Very insulting. If you're looking.
Oh, there's a couple of guys on there that are just nothing more than dweeb insulting types.
Clip custodian. It wasn't you.
Clip custodian. Clip
custodian is like, I'm sorry. Anyway, so artists. Now the artists, the ones who've been around know what we like, and they really try very hard. It's a competition, but it's also they're professional artists. You know, we had Roger Roundy, guy was top notch. He got a gig, and they left us. I mean, that's how important these artists are.
Yeah, he won once, and then that was the end. No,
he was winning. Yeah, he was winning, and he even thanked us without. Because he went to to make political illustrations. He learned on the job doing it for us for free. And then once he got a gig, he said, "Screw those guys. I'm not going to do it for free. I'm not working for free." And we still love him. That's okay.
Well, he's very active on the No Agenda Social.
Yeah.
He's constantly boosting stuff, and he's taking pictures of himself at meetups.
Oh.
And then he's taking pictures of himself with his girlfriend. He's DC taking her wife. I don't know if they're married.
Yeah, they're engaged.
And he's taking pictures of himself here and there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he's able to do that. So we, of course, want to thank the artist who brought us the artwork for the previous episode, 1609. We titled that one Pain Sponge. One of our snappier titles. And Pet Rex brought us the obvious AI-generated art, but that was okay because it was of an AI-generated monster eating the world. And it was okay. I'd say it was a 7.5 on a scale of 1 to 10, but there really wasn't anything else. We looked at a number of things trying to bring up.
Pieces didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
The trouble with the AI artist is sometimes it doesn't make any sense.
It just looks good. And people are like, oh, it looks good.
And therefore, here's Darren. Darren's got a piece that was generated by AI. It's pretty obvious. So the girl holding a sign, say no to genocide. I can barely read this sign.
Yeah.
And he couldn't make the sign any bigger.
And there's a lot of stuff. There's also a lot of stuff that came in late.
Well, those pieces at the top came in late, but that wasn't going to change anything.
No.
It wasn't. What was that all about?
Okay, so now Darren's Genocide Joe was, cute girl, cute little cartoon girl, say no to Genocide Joe. But, he just throws it into Dali and says, make it. We discussed for a while the Nestworks Firestorm, which was kind of cool. The gas mask fireman's helmet with the X. We discussed that one. But then
a couple of things. Well, I'll tell you a couple of things we discussed about. One, I said, hey, it's a good one. I picked it. I said, let's get this because it'll pop. Yeah. And then you noticed it because it's on a white background. And then you said,
it's not white.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's on a green background. And you said green.
I said pink.
Okay. It's on a pink background. And as soon as you said that, I saw, it's on a pink background. It's not going to pop that much.
So
I don't know why he did that. Why he put it on a background that has some off color.
He could have been a contender, Nestworks.
And you also didn't, but you didn't like the Curry Dvorak on the axe heads.
No,
what you said.
No, I didn't. No, on the AI monster, I didn't like the Curry Dvorak. I thought it was just a throwaway. There was no love put into our names. And there wasn't. Look at it.
On which one?
On the piece that won.
Curry Dvorak at the bottom?
Yeah, it's not. There's no love in that.
It's fine.
That's what you said the last time.
Your color blindness came into play. That is a color blindness color.
And there was a lot of Elon stuff, which wasn't really funny. The TikTok with babies. No, it was.
There's an AI piece at the bottom by Capitalist Agenda that is so over the top AI. It's a cute kind of piece, but come on, people.
And
I think we're doomed. We're not going to get anything that's actually done with.
This is the problem with AI. People get lazy that throws like make a thing with the guy with the television, put in a turkey, put in this letter and go.
Yeah, pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah. You can have, it's fun, because I have my own AI here. Then you can have a lot of fun with Michelle Obama. If you ask the art to do the if you ask the AI to do certain things.
Well, post it on No Agenda Social.
No. I delete him right away. It's so horrible. It's bad. Mm. Well, anyway, thank you very much, Pet Rex, and Pet Rex has won a couple of times, I think. Pet Rex had a couple of wins in the past.
I mean, yeah, he's Rex got a couple of pieces.
Yeah, he's got a style.
I think twice before he's won.
It's got a style. It's got a nice style. And wasn't Pet Rex Dutch? Did we figure that out?
Yes. No, he's Dutch. We did figure that out.
Yeah, Pet Rex.
We have a lot of Dutch artists for some reason.
And you know what they're good at?
Art.
Spekkoek. They make best. They make the best.
Nobody in Holland makes it.
They make the best spekkoek in the world. Thank you very much, Pet Rex. We really appreciate that, and thank you for that. Very valuable. It's important, particularly when we spread the good news of a new episode. People like they just like it. It's fun. It's fun to. These are memes you can use that I approve of. That's how you should look at it. Now let us thank the people who brought us the final tea of the three teas, the treasure. A good showing today. Short notes, highly appreciated. It's really, I mean, the amount of people who came in, of course, you let everybody know the PhD.
Wrapping.
I'm sorry?
It's wrapping.
It's wrapping, yes. The PhD program is ending, and I mean, that'll be it. It's the 333rd day of the year, which is this coming Wednesday, and then it's over. So a lot of people got in on that. And we had, yet again, near the end of the year, it's always beautiful, another show number donation. This makes two in a row. The Duke of Central Florida from Winter Park came in with 1610. Mind-boggling. We haven't had show numbers donations in a long time. All of a sudden, we get two in a row. He says, show number donation from the Duke of Central Florida, the Fibonacci Duke. There you go. Thanks. Yeah. Here you go. Thanks for working on Thanksgiving Day so we can enjoy your deconstruction. Thanks for the opportunity to gain a PhD. No jingles, no karma. Love that. Thank you so much, Duke of Central Florida.
Yeah, an interesting PhD came in later. We'll have to discuss. Jason Adams is next on this list with Smyrna, Georgia, 111133. And he sent, he sent a note to follow. I didn't get the note, and Jay didn't get the note. So
I'm looking.
The note will be read as a make good, I guess.
I don't eventually. See a note either, so I guess we didn't get it.
I got another note.
Rodney Lillybridge in Lewiston, 1069.69. Interesting. PhD donation for Rodney J. Lillybridge, a.k.a. Sir J-Mo, Black Baron of North Idaho. And that's it. These are good. Thank you.
So good that note. Contrasts with Robert Knutson.
Yes. Who wrote quite
from the type Idaho.
Note. Yes.
To Idahoans.
Mm-hmm.
To Idahos.
Idahos.
1033. And he sent a physical note in with a check. My name is Rob Knutson. Knutson. Okay, it's Knutson. So his name is Rob Knutson.
Mm-hmm.
I blew it. Recently ran for city council in my town of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Before becoming a knight or getting a PhD in media deconstruction, as a first-time candidate, I received 1,033 votes, almost 10% of the vote, but failed to make voters giddy enough to win me a seat. Oh. May my failed candidacy serve as a warning to all the kids out there who desire an elected office. Please get knighted first and or buy a PhD a before running for office.
What a canard. Adam,
you are a shoo-in for mayor. So he enclosed 1033, his total vote count. Please knight me Sir Bobby J. the K., Norwegian Knight of the Coeur d'Alene. We requested jingle consists of I was really Blotto with an F-35 scream enhancement at the round table. May I request a random can of plain seltzer water from John's secret stash? Not so secret. Robert Knutson.
Okay, the only thing I didn't have. Do we have any of John's seltzer water? Is it just the plain? I think, is that what you're drinking? The plain? It's just the plain seltzer water?
Anybody's seltzer water ink.
Okay, plain seltzer water. Okay. And yes, I think I do have this request that you have.
I was really Blotto.
I never heard that before. I remember it.
Karma.
That's That's me from Swamp Thing.
Oh.
It was the line that I argued with the producer and writer over. I said, no one says blotto in rock and roll.
No one says blotto anywhere.
And I think he's a knight, the writer. But we still disagree. Brian Teleki, Lincoln, Nebraska, 1,033 cents. ITM, I could not resist this opportunity to become Dr. Otter of the Freshwater with his PhD. That's a good one. As a trucker, I love listening to the show while driving. It gets me around 200 miles down the road. Oh, there you go. See, we're good. We're good for something. We're good for 200 miles. Sharpton Medley, Chemtrails, Little Girl Yay, and the F-22 guy scream for relationship karma. I'll do the F-35 guy, if you don't mind. He says, thanks for all you do. This is the medley version.
He's getting lunch at Chick-fil-A. The tortoise in the race. Kim Kardashian, Sigourney Weaver, Rush Hour, ESPICT. They're all jitty. ESPICT. There's no real conflict.
Oh, resist.
We must. Resist.
Just a little bit.
We must.
Just a little bit.
We must.
Just a little bit.
And we will much.
Just a little bit.
About.
Just a little bit.
That.
Just a little bit.
Be committed.
Chemtrails.
You've got. Karma.
Ernest Flores in Albuquerque, New Mexico, $1,001. Binary 33. Did you know that? 1001.
I do know.
Binary 33. I didn't know that.
Didn't know it.
I'll check it. Thank you for all you do. Another great note. Thank you for all you do. Couldn't resist the PhD and knight and knighthood combo.
Well, that was easy. That was easy. Anonymous with 1,000 ITM Tech TV donation. Now, were you on Tech TV?
Yeah, of course. Silicon Spin was Tech TV.
Oh, I didn't realize that was Tech TV. Was that the only thing you did on Tech TV?
I also ended up doing, long story, but I ended up doing Big Thinkers for a couple of years.
Oh, Big Thinkers. Oh,
but I got to meet a lot of interesting people.
I bet. Who were some of the... give me one interesting person, one big thinker.
Guy who invented the cell phone was on that show.
What's his name?
Here's my favorite one. He wasn't on the show I did, but he was on Stan Lee. Stan Lee was on the show. I talked to him for a while. Jay Chiat, I did have him on the show. I guess everybody was interesting.
Oh.
But... here's the kicker. I just slapped myself in the head when I think of this. Stan Lee is on the show.
Explain who Stan Lee is. I don't think
Stan Lee is the guy that invented all the Marvel comic characters. Either that or DC, one of the two. He's Marvel, I think. People in the troll room know for sure. But Stan Lee's very famous. And so he's on the show, and he's just a nice guy. He's kind of a goofball, actually. And where was I? He's there. Why didn't I buy a handful, like maybe five or 10 comic books?
And have them sign them.
Those comic books, a signed Stan Lee comic book is worth $1,000 to $2,000.
Woo!
So I'm just basically let you like $20,000 walk out the door.
That's like not buying Bitcoin.
At 25 cents.
At 25 cents, yes. So you were basically the OG Joe Rogan. You're doing the Joe Rogan show before.
Joe Rogan's got a longer show. He's a different interview style.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I don't think so.
And we move on back to Anonymous. Thanks for working through the holidays. You're welcome. We do it with great pleasure. Jingles, I've got Information Man and Fear is Freedom. I'd like to be knighted Sir Geese Mill of the Four Corners Demilitarized Zone. And we shall make it so.
I've got Information Man. New shit has come to life.
Subjugation is liberation. Contradiction is truth. Those are the facts of this world. And you will all surrender to them. You pigs in human clothing.
Woo, yes. There you go.
Sherelle Peterson comes in from Auburn, California, Pleasant Town, just north of Sacramento. $1,000. Happy Thanksgiving, she writes.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work. Jobs karma for everyone. Dame name, Dame Realtastic of the Sierra Foothills. Okay.
Jobs, and jobs.
Let's another short note.
Yes, they're all short. Beautiful.
Karma.
Amy McDaniel, Black Diamond, Washington, $1,000. John Adam, thanks so much for the entertaining education you provide each week. I look forward to each show and am not disappointed. Thanks, Amy McDaniel. Thank you, Amy.
Timothy McKay in Battle Creek, Michigan. Battle Creek. Kellogg's. Gentlemen, thank you for your courage and kudos for working the holiday. Please accept this reciprocation of my treasure for your talent.
Wow.
You may anoint me as Sir Cordwainer of yore. I'd like grass-fed ribeyes and rye Sazeracs. Be Sazerac, why? Rye. Sazerac, rye. At the round table, no jingles, no karma. Timothy McKay, Battle Creek, Michigan.
Yes, we got the grass-fed grain finished for you. I hope that's okay. QQ. Ah, we know QQ. QQ. Key West, QQ. Florida. 1,000. If I still qualify for the PhD, then good. If not, you still deserve this donation for all the good things you do to change the world. Wow. That's a bit, pretty big kudos, man. I don't know if we change it. Well, if you think so.
We change our underwear, it's about it. And I'm not even sure about him. Kevin Stephenson, Muscle Shores, Alabama.
Shoals.
Yes, Shoals. In the morning and happy Thanksgiving, he writes, I've enjoyed and learned a lot from John's articles in PC Magazine back in the day. Then I found this podcast, and now I'm enjoying Adams just as much. You two brightened my week.
Oh.
I was in K-12 education in Alabama as a CTO for over 26 years and loved it. But when COVID and online forced learning forced us to give every child a Chromebook and then support them and the teachers at home day and night, essentially my health took a downturn.
Oh, man, I'll bet. That must have sucked.
I took the early retirement option and left. Best move I've made. And now I work for a private company selling educational websites. Also found out at least 7 of my peers across the state that I know of had health issues at the time due to the added stress of incredible amounts of federal funding for hardware, software, but regulations that couldn't be spent on additional salaries.
I remember this.
Since CTOs are not hourly workers like the technicians, we took the brunt of it and many left.
We talked about this. We talked about tech guys going, no, we can't do this. You just politicians are like, yeah, give them all Chromebooks. It's good. Learn at home. And they're like, we need, you can't support all this stuff. And teachers were getting angry at them. This sucks. It's not working. Fix it.
Those poor guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get in the middle, you're a tech guy.
Yeah, it's bad.
Since I have more change in my pocketbook now, in my pocket now, I no longer want to be a douchebag, so please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
This should make me an Instanite and no agenda scholar. For my knight name, I'd like to be Sir TRS-80. I'll take Blanton's and carrot cake at the round table, and as for jingles, I'd love John's spooky donate and R2-D2 karma. Keep up the great work. Kevin in Muscle Shoals.
Alabama.
You've got
donate
karma. You've got karma.
There you go. We got Sir Moskowitz from Silver Spring, Maryland, with 1,000. No notes. So we'll give him a double up karma as he deserves.
You've got
double up.
I'll take the next one. You can take the long one.
No, it's not that long, but okay. It's shorter, actually.
Matthew Gebhardt, 1,000. After all these years, crowning you graduating with my PhD. Oh, this is the one. Oh, no, this is not the one. The learning never stops. Next, I'm enrolling at the No Agenda Institute of Theoretical and Applied Podcasting. Well, you can help us open it, because
no such thing. But
make a positive difference in the world. Keep up the great work. Thank you.
Lee North, 1,000. My wife thinks I'm crazy, but I couldn't pass up the chance for a PhD and a credit for the Thanksgiving Day special. I guess my new title should be Baron Sir Dr. Goon. Thank you for your courage. As always, jobs, 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 and R2-D2 karma. Lee North, Kansas City, Kilo Fox, Zero Bravo Echo Hotel. 73's Kilo 5 Alpha Charlie. What, your wife thinks you're crazy for donating, getting a PhD, but she, not for being a ham? Dude, let's be honest about it. Well, thanks. I'm glad she didn't protest too much. She's obviously a fantastic woman.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
You've got karma.
Evgeny Damaskine, or Evgeny Damaskine, in Boston, Massachusetts. I think this is the first Evgeny that we've ever had. Hmm. It's a great name. $1,000. And he says, I want my framed PhD. Well, you're going to get your PhD, but it, you have framed. To frame it yourself.
Frame it yourself.
Yes. It's very carefully packed, so I wouldn't worry about that.
Yeah, it comes in an official envelope, like a fold-open thing, just like, well, it is a real PhD. Yeah. So it's indistinguishable from one from an institution, like an asylum. Sir Jim Watts, Baron of Whistler. Ah, Whistler, BC. I've been to Whistler.
Okay, this is the questionable. This is what I have to discuss.
This is very questionable. I will read the note and then we shall discuss. 1,000 Canadian enclosed for a cut rate PhD. We celebrated Thanksgiving on October, a harvest celebration up here. I will stay with Baron title as it has a nice ring. Jobs karma, please. Jim Watts, Baron of Whistler. Now, we didn't necessarily say that you could get a cut rate PhD, now, did we?
No. No, but we didn't say you couldn't.
Nah, there's no evidence we didn't say we couldn't.
So I was very torn when I saw this $733 donation for the cut rate PhD.
Yeah.
Because the Canadians, we've always given them full credit for
Australians and New Zealanders.
And Australians, the two of them, and mm-hmm. Zealanders, if they anyone listens.
And soon Argentinians.
we won't get too many listeners down there. So I don't know what I can't not give it to him, but is it, we only have 1 week left. Does any other Canadians want to come in for 733?
Boy, I mean, if anyone argues with this, I think you should just go kick a Canadian in the shins. But I think we should do it.
Yeah,
because okay. We'll do it. You're right.
There's only one more week left in the promotion, so that's the end of it.
All right. Well, here's your jobs karma and congratulations on your well-deserved PhD.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
You stop. Karma.
Zachary Michael in also in Canada, 730.3, which probably adds up to the right number too. Thank you for everything you do. I thought I have a few things to say, but knowing how much you two adore long notes, I will refrain from doing so and deprive you of such gratification. He goes on and on. However, in a handsome millennial gals get. However, as a handsome millennial, gals get at me. Please dummy Sir Cal 1984 and look forward to my PhD as second Canadian in the same show. That comes up with basically the same calculation. How could anyone pass up a chance to get two birds stoned at once? For jingles, possibly play the medley Just Take the Vaccine at the end of the show. Thanks again, Sir C.A. Canada, Sir Canada.
So I looked for this. I couldn't find a medley. First of all, medley maybe means a supercut. I could not find a Just Take the Vaccine. I mean, there's not a supercut of Just Take the Vaccine.
I don't remember it either.
No, so I couldn't find
it. You may have heard it someplace else.
But we do have a good end of show mix for you, and we appreciate your support. Anonymous in Chicago, Illinois, 34567. Very much appreciate having something good to listen to, says Anonymous. A couple of submissions for you. I had a friend in college who exclaimed, "Yipper, Skipper," for any answers in the affirmative, sometimes shortening to "Yippers." And for the weight loss drug game, Dianthin or something thereabouts. A very sincere thank you for your courage. P.S. It appears
I get it.
What?
Die thin.
Oh, die. Got it. P.S. It appears Ice Age Farmer has gone silent. Adam's mention reminded me about him. Nothing online for at least a year. Oh, I hope he's okay.
I don't know who it is.
Ice Age Farmer. Yeah, we played the clip of him predicting that the be food shortages. And I play it every year.
Food shortage
and I play
guy,
it every
yeah.
year.
He probably starved to death. So, yes, he thanks us for working on Thanksgiving, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we're good with that, man.
Now we go with the Aaron Shaw in Prairieville, Louisiana, 333.33. Switcheroo. I appreciate you all so much, especially since you all work on important holidays like this one. This donation is for my smoking hot husband, Sir Jew Claw.
All right, Sir Jew Claw.
Towards upping his peerage in the future. I don't think I need any jingles, but badly needed jobs, Karma, for something I'm trying to accomplish with my business in the near future. Got to get my mom out of my house, Karma.
Oh, that's a big
LOL, karma. I know there isn't one of those. Since her house caught fire 2.5 months ago, and she's been living with us since.
Oh, no.
Finding a new house in this market is not proving to be very easy. And lastly, I'd like to mention the upcoming No Agenda meetup in southern Louisiana that we're hosting on Friday, December 1st.
That'll get your mom out of the house. Bring a bunch of No Agenda people in.
I think that's the idea, to be honest about it.
That'll do it.
I should call out a few douchebags I know at the upcoming meetup, but I'll keep them anonymous for now.
Oh.
Thanks, Aaron Shaw, Dame Mary Moon.
And because of that, we'll give you a TPP jobs, Karma.
Jobs.
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 Jobs. Jobs.
Jobs. You've got
jobs.
Karma.
Let us know if it worked. Aaron Brzezinski in Etowah, Tennessee, 333.33. If you're in El Paso area, stop by Downrange Brewery. See Gabe and his wife for the best beer and the best people in town. John and Adam, thank you for the greatest podcast in the universe. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Sir Ronald Gardner in San Diego, California, 333.33. He's also Sir Wrong, 33. ITM gents wanted to express our gratitude and thanks for the work you do to make No Agenda the best podcast in the universe, especially during the holidays where you continue to work and we slack off. Thank you ever so much. This donation will make me a Viscount. Please change my title to Sir Ronald Gardner, Viscount of Insane Diego and surrounding waters. We would like some house selling moving karma as we try to escape from the Socialist Republic of California. Happy Thanksgiving and many blessings to you and your families and to all the knights and dames out there. Stay safe. Cheers, Sir Wrong 33.
You've got karma.
And coming in from Amsterdam, Sir Pete, 222.22, Row of Ducks, ITM Sir Pete here. I love the show even better lately. He's been around for a long time. Thank you. Here's a sack of ducks in return. Could you grace my fellow producers and myself with some jobs, Karma? Love is lit. And he says, oh, he wants a jingle request. He has a healthy diet, which I think is the healthy news diet, F-35 goat karma. So we'll combine that with your jobs request.
If you wake up with the blues, trying to fill your day with news, there's one thing you must remember, No Agenda in the morning.
For a healthy, balanced news diet, try noagendashow.com.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You got it.
Wow.
Karma.
Paul Kroshulik in Binghamton, New York, 222.22, another road, ducks. Paul from Binghamton, New York, Binghamton. Now we always say Binghamton, but it's Binghamton. No jingles, no karma. Thank you.
And then we have, oh, yes, one of these. It's always the jokers. Sean in Stafford, Virginia, 212.80. Hey, J&A, after 3+ years of listening, glad to no longer be a douchebag. Here's my 212.80. My most recent pay raise brought me to 43.33. I can't deny the Podfather anymore after that number came my way. Thanks for working Thanksgiving. Really, it means a lot to get quality content on the holiday. I will be listening for the fat lady to sing at 2 p.m. while milking my holiday double time. And has a very known sequence. Trump, I'm going to come. Kamala, don't come. Joe, whole load. And a Howard Dean scream.
I'm going to come.
Do not come.
I'm going to give you the whole load today.
There you go. Never heard that one. Thank you.
Eric Adler in Punta Gorda, Florida, thought it was time to donate when I was giving a frequency change to Jax at 133.33.
Oh, he's a pilot.
Well, at 33,000 feet.
He's a pilot.
Thanks, mofos.
That's pretty cool. If that really, it's possible there's 133.3 frequency for Jackson, for Jacksonville.
I'll finish this up with Linda Lou Patkin in Lakewood, Colorado. Jobs Karma, for a resume search that gets results, go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. That's imagemakersinc, I-N-K, with a K.com, or just find Linda Lou Patkin on the producer list.
Her streak continues.
So thankful for you guys.
Her streak continues. Now, amazing.
Yeah, I know. She's a stare down. So I want to say that Eric Arsjo in Stockholm, Sweden, that came in at 199.99 is really a $200 donation, and that happens to be just exchange rate screw up.
Okay. So he is definitely on the list for
Associate
Executive Producer.
No, we recognize him, and let's give him a double up karma.
Oh, wow. You moved up and a karma.
You've got.
Perfect. Double up.
Karma.
Well, we, of course, thank our executive and associate executive producers and congratulate our PhDs, our new PhDs. We'll actually have a little ceremony for you in a moment. This is ending. That'll end Sunday. Will be the last time. No, Wednesday, the 333rd day of the year. Last day you can pick that up. Thank you so much. This makes me feel good about working on the holiday. I hope it makes you feel good. The value has been exchanged. It is highly appreciated. We have a lot more people to thank who supported us today. John's going to take us through the 50s.
I will, starting with Patricia Lewis in Merced, California, 16667. She actually sent a little note in. I think she sent a card. Yeah, she sent a card. She says, thanks, John and Adam. She's a cute card. She got good. You know what? It looks like Tina's handwriting.
Yeah. Tina's is a little less balloony.
Anonymous in Calgary, she came in with 16667. Anonymous in Calgary, Alberta, 120. Want some baby making karma? We'll give you that at the end. Don Malley in Fremont, California, 113. Ian Field, 100. Rachel Pilikowski, no amount. She's in Portage, Wisconsin. She says, don't say the amount. So we won't. But it's funny where it's located on the list.
And she wants to be deduced.
You've been deduced.
William Gherkin in Centennial, Colorado. Happy Thanksgiving. Joseph Salino in East Syracuse, New York, 100. Stephen Rivas in Roland Heights, California, 100. Dame Twin Mominator in Cumming, Georgia, 100. Another happy Thanksgiving. Brian Lillard in Prosper, Texas, 8888. Jack Schofield or Field in Yankeetown, Florida. Looks like he's going to be a knight. And I think this is a note you have to read because of it.
Yes, because having completed 20 monthly payments for knighthood, let's do a switcheroo for my lovely wife, Susie, who has managed to take 51 trips around the sun with me. Yes, we had a few fights. 51 years together. Oh, wow. Please name her Dame Susie Boot Scooter of the Nature Coast. What is that name all about? No jingles, no karma. We have been blessed. No special fare, just half portions at the round table. And please deduce.
You've been deduced.
I will renew and continue to fulfill my contract of monthly donations. And until I do so, will remain a douche, as keeping a promise and fulfilling a contract is very important. Love them boobs. P.S. Susie's birthday is 11/24. Please put on the birthday list. She's on there. Jack Schofield. John, it's phonetically Schofield. You got it. Love you guys. ITM. Love you too. And we look forward to welcoming Susie.
Jason Maurer in Vancouver, Washington, 8008. And so is Jack's, by the way, is 8008. And then we get to Kevin McLaughlin, our Archduke of Luna, lover of American boobs in Concord, North Carolina, with 8008 with a commentary. Did you know boobs are proof men can focus on two things at once?
I like that one. That's a good one.
It's observation. Yeah. It's observation.
It's just
Sir Lineman in Anna, Illinois, 8008. Thanks for working on the holiday. Joseph Weish in Miami, Miami, California is what it says. It does have a note. Does it say on here?
I don't know.
Miami, Florida. It was misinterpreted.
There you go.
Miami, Florida, 7777. Gregory Kierdak in Padova, Italy. Hey, Padua.
Hey.
And he says, Gregory. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Kate Smith in Leonardtown, Maryland, 7272. Sir Rick in Arlington. He's actually now he's Baron Rick, I think, in Arlington, Washington, 6996. We have to now get it in our minds that it's Baron
Rick.
Josh Magnuson in Kyle, Texas, 6969.
He was at the Austin meetup
donation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Sir Becoming Heroic in Schererville, Indiana, 6886, which he calls jiggly boobs. I have to look at that and figure that one out. Scott Riley in Meridian, Idaho, 66. Cameron Ling in North Branch, Minnesota, at 6010. There's Kevin McLaughlin again with 6006, the small boobs. Ladies, are you living your breast life? Oh, he's inserted a pun into this.
he's still there. We love you.
Yeah, that's astonishing. Tim Freeman in Placerville, California, 6006, another aficionado. Matthew Elwart in Weatherford, Texas, 6006. Ryan Smith in Raleigh, North Carolina, 6006. Matthew Martin, Como, New South Wales, Australia, 60. Sir Not Jake in Thompson, Connecticut, 5678. Sir Edward of the Henpecked in Omaha, Nebraska, 5555. Paul Webb in Twickenham, Middlesex, UK, 5555.
He says, Happy Thanksgiving, gents. Don't worry, everyone in the UK is working today as well. Well, that's true.
Stephen, and they are getting ready for Black Friday. Stephen Smith in Maynardville, Tennessee, 5510. Baron Henry of the Outpost West in Rancho Palos Verdes, California, 5242. Alan Huffman in Urbandale, Iowa, 5042. Jordan Brown in Centerville, Ohio, 5033. As we get into the 50s, Forrest Martin, 5005. Andrew Benz in Missouri, 5005. And now we got the $50 donors, and we'll wrap this thing up. Starting with Robert Case in Mill Spring, North Carolina. Matt Illingworth in Montclair, New Jersey. Julian Robbins in Aptos, California. Matthias Machinsky in Hawthorne, California. Nicholas Rudowich in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. Daniel LaBoy in Bath, Michigan. Michael Sakura in New Richmond, Wisconsin. Tatiana Prince in Hollywood, Florida. Sir Patrick Macomb in New York City. Robert Hanna in Poway, California. Kate Haskell, there's a lot of them today.
Yeah.
Kate Haskell in San Rafael, California, David Perdue in Snow Hill, North Carolina, Michael Romano in Sebastopol, Gaucho Woodworking, check him out, in Redondo Beach, California, Greg Huff in Austin, Texas, Alexa Delgado in another Aptos dweller, Ronald Sedario in Riverview, Florida, Carrie Meeks in Franklin, Tennessee, Rita Harrington in Sparks, Nevada. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Alexis Robles in Chula Vista. I'm the two uncles he never had. She never had. Devin O'Connell in Boylston, Massachusetts. James Farrell in Haverhill, Massachusetts. And last on the list is Michael Statham. And he's from parts unknown on this list. So we want to thank these a lot of people today for helping us out on show 1610. Making it a possibility.
Thank you all.
Making it a winner.
Yes. Thank you all so much. And thank you to those of you who donated under $50. We do not mention those names to make sure they're anonymous. If people want to be anonymous, $49.99 works perfectly for us. And of course, if you're on one of those many sustaining donations, which you can make up your own number. A lot of people like 333. A lot of people like 33. Some like 12, 12, 11, 11. You can find a whole bunch more at
Dvorak.org. /NA
or at noagendadonations.com. Thank you for making our overtime here very valuable to us. We hope you appreciate it as well. And we look forward to handing out those PhDs, but also the titles of executive producer and associate executive producer for the people we mentioned earlier. They're real. You can put them on your LinkedIn. You can put them on your resume. And of course, they are completely valid, and you can open up an IMDb profile account with them. Thank you very much for supporting the best podcast in the universe, episode 1610.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order. Order.
Shut up, Slay.
Shut up, Slay.
Oddly enough, the birthday list is pretty short. We have David Kekka turns 45. Will turn 45 on November 15th. Jack Schofield wishes his wife Susie a happy birthday. Turns 51 on November 24th. That is tomorrow. And Jordan Brown wishes his son Ren Brown a happy birthday. He'll be turning 1 year old tomorrow. And Patricia Lewis wishes her daughter Emily Mitchell a happy birthday for the 29th. We say happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe.
Title changes. Turn faces, ladies. Changes.
We have two title changes. Sir Ronald Gardner, Baron of Insane Diego and Surrounding Waters, becomes Sir Ronald Gardner, Viscount of Insane Diego and Surrounding Waters. And Sir Goon becomes Baron Sir Dr. Goon. And we congratulate both of you. And we'd like to welcome our fresh PhD candidates up here at the dais. Come on up here. Duke of Central Florida, Jason Adams, Rodney Lillibridge, Robert Knutson, Brian Teleke, Ernest Flores, Anonymous, Sherelle Patterson, Amy McDaniel, Timothy McKay, QQ, Kevin Stevenson, Sir Moskowitz, Matthew Gephardt, Lee North, Evgeny Damaskin, Sir Jim Watts, Baron of Whistler, and Zachary Michael. Welcome, new No Agenda MD, PhD, to the Society of Learned Persons. The path to this high academic honor for some of you has been a long one and costly one. Some of the price has been paid for by your hard-earned wisdom and some in other ways. But today is not the end. No, it is only a beginning. From this point forward, go forth and spread the No Agenda word far and wide. We will not be silenced. We will not be deterred. The truth is out there. Now go and find it. You always laugh at me.
It's actually getting a little better because you're so dramatic.
I'm working on it. Hey, we also have some dames and knights. It's a good day here at the OK Corral. Bring out
there
that
you
sword.
Go.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Got it.
Oh, yeah.
This thing.
Sherelle Patterson, Susie, Brian Teleke, Anonymous, Timothy McKay, Kevin Stevenson, Zachary Michael, and Robert Knutson. Please join us here on the podium. You're all now official dames and knights of the No Agenda Roundtable. I'm very proud to pronounce KD as Dame Realistic of the Sierra Foothills, Dame Susie Boot Scooter of the Nature Coast, Sir Dr. Otter of the Freshwater, Sir Geesemill of the Four Corners Demilitarized Zone, Sir Cordwainer of Yore, Sir TRS-80, Sir Khan 1984, and Sir Bobby J. The K. For you, we've got Hookers and Blow, Rent Boys, and Chardonnay, along with plain seltzer water, grass-fed ribeyes and rye, Sazeracs, Blantons, and carrot cake, and of course, you've got the mutton and meat. Woo, man, what a lot of activity we have here today. Please go to noagendarings.com and give us your ring size and address where we can send it. PhDs also go to noagendarings.com. You'll see in the menu that you can fill out the official name you'd like on your listed on your PhD, which will be sent to you, and give us an address for that. And the ring recipients, obviously, it comes with the wax to seal your official correspondence and your official certificate of authenticity. Thank you all for becoming knights and dames of the No Agenda Roundtable.
No Agenda Meetup.
Well, amazingly, there are a couple of meetups that are taking place this week, tomorrow to be exact. But first, we have a report from the San Francisco meetup.
Hello, this is Lavish reporting to you live from the San Francisco meetup at Sunset Reservoir Brewing.
This is Sir Recalcitrant Crazy Steve II. And just letting you know, we're bombing again.
This is Sir Paul, Lack Knight of the Bay Area, at my first meetup.
This is Baroness Sarah Rupert, listener from episode 1. I'm here with the original sucker baby, Violet.
And this is her better half, Jonathan Rupert, first time meetup in the morning.
Captain Luke here. Thank you for your courage.
This is a dude named Ben, kind of San Francisco, exploring all the beers San Francisco has to offer.
Baronet Boyle here, drinking the beers.
In the morning.
Yeah, I could tell you that in the morning sounded like it was done after some of the beers.
Yeah.
Here's what we have coming up tomorrow, no agenda meetup wise. We have the Fort Worth Thanksgiving Recovery Meetup at 1 o'clock at Flip's Patio Grill. The weather permitting, it'll be outside Fort Worth, Texas. And also tomorrow, Flight of the No Agenda. You can never go wrong with Beer and Tacos Meetup. That'll be at 3:33 p.m. Pacifico Tortilla Cantina in Torrance, California. Of course, Leo Bravo, he does all of those out there. And then there's this huge list that Mimi NoahTooManyEggs.com sent. It's not that big. And I'm just going to mention a couple of them. November 30th, Tilburg, the Netherlands. We got Higginbotham, Connecticut on December 2nd. Remember, Indianapolis, Indy. Hello, Indy. Curry and the Keeper are coming your way on December the 4th. We got Houston on December the 9th. Fredericksburg, Virginia on the 9th. We got Epping, New Hampshire on the 16th. This is in December. Charlotte, North Carolina, December 21st. We got them all the way up until Christmas. No Agenda meetups. You deserve to go to one of these. It is the perfect companion to the No Agenda podcast, where you get to meet people, hang out with them, feel good, communicate with human beings. No AI allowed. And of course, connection is protection. Go to noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's easy and always a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you want me. Trigger or hell to lame. You want to be where everybody feels the same.
All right, I only have two ISOs, so I'll just go first with my ISOs. Here's the first one.
Yeah, okay.
And here's the second one.
Don't believe Joe Biden ever.
I could not resist.
That's a cutie.
I could not resist.
Okay, I've got four.
Mm-hmm.
All of them pretty decent. BS is the top one.
Bullshit. It's all bullshit.
Hey, wait a minute. Who is this? I recognize it.
Bullshit. It's all bullshit.
Trump. That's Trump. Yes. Okay.
It's Trump.
Yeah.
Then we have a classic bye.
Bye.
Oh, I don't like the ending, but okay.
And then we have the sound effect, which I appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Good ending for a Thanksgiving show. And I think this is probably the best one, which is thank God.
Thank God it's over.
Yeah. Okay, I'm with you on that one. I'm with you. That's a good one. We'll take
that
one.
And now it's time for...
Good news.
All right. I do have a good news
clip. Of course you have a good news clip, because it's your beat and you need to do it.
Well, this is unfortunately is a long clip, and then it has a little follow kicker.
A good news clip. A good news clip can never get too much good news.
Well, this is good news for people with alopecia.
And now to a story that is positively San Diego. A student at OLP Our Lady of Peace in North Park has just won the highest Girl Scout honor called the Gold Award. And it's for her dedication, leadership, and commitment to making a difference in her community.
ABC 10 News reporter Perla Shaheen joins us now live from North Park. Perla, you had a chance to talk to this young woman about her struggle with alopecia and how she's turning all of it into a positive.
Well, Jared, we met right here at the Academy of Our Lady of Peace. This is her high school. And let me tell you, sitting in front of a 17-year-old who is so well-spoken and so accomplished was extremely impressive. And this tote bag that I'm carrying is just one part of her mission to spread awareness around alopecia. It's a disease that causes sudden and severe hair loss.
At 14 years old, Gabriella Cimino started losing large patches of hair on her scalp.
Losing my hair, my thick hair,
was scary.
Cimino had just started high school at Our Lady of Peace near University Heights. Doctors assumed the sudden balding was correlated to stress.
It takes a toll on your mental health, your self-confidence. You feel very alone.
Finally, in May of 2021, Cimino was diagnosed with alopecia areata. She turned to her Girl Scout troop for support, but no one understood the disease.
Looking through the photos online, and there were only pictures of middle-aged men with bald spots in their beards or their heads. I didn't really feel represented.
This is the Project Alopecia tote bag.
So Cimino decided to use her Girl Scout Gold Award project as an opportunity to raise awareness of the disease. She started a health and wellness fair at her school, giving women the opportunity to donate their hair, and she created tote bags filled with educational pamphlets and books that students could pick up to learn more about alopecia.
Each of those tote bags were put into every school in the Diocese of San Diego.
Her work was so profound, the Girl Scouts recognized her with the Gold Award. It's their highest honor, and only a short list of members are awarded.
Wow. I mean, not just good news, but good news with a tote bag.
The tote bag. I mean,
and you have a second part to this good news?
There's a little second part that's kind of wraps it.
Oh, this is fantastic.
How did it feel
when
you had earned it? It was definitely fulfillment, a lot of accomplishment, a lot of gratitude that I actually experienced everything. I turned a negative into a positive, and I would never go back.
In just a week, Gabby is going to start her senior year here at Our Lady of Peace, and she plans to continue this work in college, and then she will join the Gold Award ceremony for the Girl Scouts next year. Live in North Park, Perla Shaheen, ABC 10 News.
Wow. Well, John, I can only say you've outdone yourself. Good news and a tote bag.
A good news story from JCD. Happy vibes for you and me. And we all feel better now he's done his bit. So back to reality, that's turning to shit.
Yeah! Sir Chris Wilson, he lives. And we love him for it. All right, affiliates, we're at 3 hours, 33 minutes, and 33 seconds. Huh? How about that, huh? Huh?
Too long.
Too long. Well, it's what it is. It's a special Thanksgiving episode.
It's a special show.
A special show just for y'all. Coming up next, the No Agenda stream, as you continue to hang out here, I'm sure, since who wants to hang out with the relatives? Oh, it's episode 65 of Curry and the Keeper, which was podcasted just last night, fresh off the grill. End of show mixes, D's Laugh, Sir Michael Anthony. We got Danny Luce and Sir Starkweather. We thank them very much. We thank all of you. Thank you, trolls, for being here in the chat room. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where it's actually hot and hazy for some reason today, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We look forward to being right back here with you on Sunday. We hope you will join us. Remember, connection is protection. And don't eat too much turkey, you turkeys. Until Sunday, remember us at Dvorak.org/NA. Adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such. So far, no good.
But again, we're so far ahead of the game on this deconstruction stuff that it could be months from now.
It does happen. It does happen.
Yeah. Spotting lies, let me give you some clues. Non-pertinent information, I mean, it puts you in a snooze. Masquerading as the news. Stories amplified, given to the public. But think about it, who's to choose? Information war, supplements, and so much more. Owen Schroyer, next in line. Young Alex Jones, now sees you in time. 60 days on trumped up charges to the nine. Calling you all out. Pigs in human swine. Law enforcement want their lives easier. Eating donuts over pounding the pavement is not evil, but it is tastier. A funny statement nonetheless. Very unpopular amongst our base. Yes, global citizen, it never made sense to me. You can only live your life as a private entity. Can we all agree? Collectivism over your individuality's a hell of a schism. What makes the show special? Win, lose, or drone? Drink Sydney Mondays, producers put away the phone. Perfect.
preferably in a drawer. What do we know have in store? PhDs in media deconstruction, I mean, so much more. Check out the No Agenda store. No agenda, you the bomb. I could just go on and on. Time to wrap up the news. I mean, it's the time to wrap up the news like I'm wrapping up the song.
Happy Thanksgiving, New York City. As your plant-based-centered mayor, I'ma eat a plant-based-centered lifestyle, even on a holiday. Y'all eating turkey and ham while I am eating tofurkey and yams. Enjoy your meat while you can. We already had meatless Mondays in school. Then I run vegan Fridays. And we going to keep trying to make all y'all plant-based. But if y'all still got to eat meat, the FDA just approved lab-grown chicken for human consumption. And if y'all still not satisfied with that, we gonna make y'all eat crickets and cockroaches. Like I said, enjoy that roast while you can. Y'all gonna be eating rats.
In all the history of respiratory-borne viruses of any type, asymptomatic transmission has never been the driver of outbreaks. The driver of outbreaks is always a symptomatic person.
Mouse in the 90s.
Quite clear.
666
severe side effects.
We keep
having 666. A little bit slow, but hey.
That was the worst answer he's ever given for any question.
Sick person. An epidemic is not driven by asymptomatic carriers.
It's too bad we record these things. Yeah, we keep
a website.
What kills more than coronavirus?
Alerted, so we sort of had to discover it on our own.
I can't breathe, and then he died.
So language is subtly fast.
Most child molesters love them.
Severe side effects.
Team of scholars.
I'm staging gas cans.
A little bit slow.
Really now?
Dumb amounts mounting thing. They are. Molesters?
The flu is a severe via a vampire peak in the winter. Well, winter is coming to its axis.
One was called Atlantic Storm and the other one was called Dark Winter.
Dark Winter?
The darkest and worst days of this pandemic, unfortunately, are ahead of us now.
On a dark winter, more.
See it. Look at it. Go through all the processes. And by the way, we're about to go into a dark winter. The recent dark winter exercise.
It's a very dark moment.
The best podcast in the universe.
Mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Thank God it's over.